Northern Ireland's Veterans Commissioner David Johnston.
Soldier F has faced legal scrutiny for more than a quarter of a century, and it is my hope that today's ruling brings that long and arduous process to a close.
The doctor won't see you again for the 13th time since 2023. Resident doctors are on strike or will strike next month. Health Secretary Wes Streeting.
These strikes are completely unnecessary and wholly irresponsible, and they risk harming patients, setting back the progress we're making in the NHS, and putting enormous pressure on other NHS staff.
Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Plaid Cymru have won the Senedd by-election in Caerphilly, ending Labour's 100-year hold on the area. The new MS, Lindsay Whittle, won 47% of the vote, ahead of Reform UK on 36%. Both parties beat Labour to a distant third, with just 11% of the vote. The Labour peer and former First Minister, Carwyn Jones, has told LBC it is very disappointing.
It shows that we have a great challenge before the elections in May, and it's important now that we think very carefully about how we meet that challenge in order to clearly do far better. I think there are some winds buffeting the party at the moment, not just in Wales, but across the UK.
Leaders including Volodymyr Zelensky will gather in London later to discuss the war in Ukraine. The Prime Minister will call for Kyiv to be given more long-range weapons to step up the pressure on Russia. Sir Keir Starmer's told LBC that plans for digital ID will bring the UK into the modern age. The Prime Minister has been setting out a wider vision for the smartphone-based ID to be rolled out before the next election. Critics have raised concerns about privacy, data security and the expense of the system. But Sir Keir has insisted it will make life simpler and more secure.
You can use it for anything that requires identification, and there are lots of things. If you want to rent, for example, if you want to apply for a mortgage, if you want to get your child into primary school, there's a catchment area, and you've got to show where you live, proving who you are, what your date of birth is, where you live.
You can read Sakir's exclusive article on the LBC app. A watchdog has warned there are still significant challenges in how police tackle grooming gangs. An HMIC report says some progress is being made, but there are still shortcomings in coordination with other agencies. Separately, sources have warned it could take months to find a chair for the troubled grooming gangs inquiry. Polls have just opened in the Republic of Ireland to choose the country's next president. The winner will serve for the next 7 years, replacing Michael D. Higgins. And Nottingham Forest had a winning start under new manager Sean Dyche with a 2-0 victory over Porto in the Europa League last night. Rangers lost 3-0 to the Norwegian side Brann, and Celtic beat Sturm Graz 2-1. In the Conference League, Crystal Palace lost 1-0 to AEK Larnaca, and Aberdeen were thrashed 6-0 by AEK Athens. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 95.78 after closing up 63 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most, cloudier with heavier rain in the northeast, a high of 13 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Want to be the ghost with the most this Halloween? Aldi has a truly magical range, including spookily sweet treats, frightful party food, pumpkins to pick from, and much more in store now. What a spellbinding selection! Hurry down to Aldi. But whatever you do, don't look back.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven on Friday, October the 24th, there was no welcome in the valleys for Labour as they were trounced, comprehensively trounced in that Senedd by-election. What does it mean for Labour? Also, I have to say, what does it mean for the Conservatives? They've had a particularly bad night. And Reform, not far behind. They've had a good night. We'll analyse it and work out, try to work out, of course, what it means nationally. Meanwhile, in other news, you remember that promise to build, baby, build? Housing Secretary Steve Reid, speaking with the earlier this month about the chronic lack of house building in London.
It's absolutely shocking, the failure to get house building going. It's not just in London, it's across the whole country.
Now they're changing the what's called affordable housing targets in London I'll explain to you what deems or what is deemed to be affordable housing and ask why have they slipped on yet another promise. Meanwhile, the doctors, the 13th time since 2023, junior doctors, resident doctors, are going on strike. Here's Dr. Arjun Nagra from the BMA, British Medical Association, telling LBC yesterday.
Thousands of doctors are not in work, and we need to be in work, and we want to work. But currently, the proposals put forward just don't address that. And as a result, the healthcare service that we are working in is struggling.
And notwithstanding the tragedy of Bloody Sunday, and the way in which the paratroopers and the British Army performed on that day, now, with the acquittal of that veteran ex-para, can we finally put an end to this? Paul Young from the Northern Ireland Veterans Movement said this outside Belfast Crown Court.
Soldiers across the United Kingdom will be happy with this, and I hope that there is no more soldiers brought to the courts here.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The rumblings from Wales were heard and felt hundreds of miles away in Westminster. There was great nervousness as to which way the Senate by-election was going to go. It was thought that Reform could nick it. In the end, it didn't quite go their way, but they had a good night. Here were the details. LBC's Caitlin Parr, who has been at the count in Caerphilly, Wales, overnight, joins me now. Morning, Caitlin.
Good morning, Nick. What a night it turned out to be here in Caerphilly. I feel like I need to stress how I cannot stress enough how seismic this defeat is for Wales, for Welsh Labour. Not only have we seen Plaid Cymru make history here tonight, taking a seat off Welsh Labour that they have held since 1918, the Welsh Labour have never lost an election here in Caerphilly with the constituency as we know it for over 100 years. But we've seen Welsh Labour effectively wiped out. They only won 11% of the votes tonight. The Welsh Conservatives, you touched on there in your introduction, they only took home 2% of the vote. So an unbelievable change in what is the norm of Welsh politics. Now, Plaid Cymru, as I say, they just edged it to the post tonight, beating Reform UK. We really did think that it was going to go right down to the wire. Polling has consistently shown them neck and neck, way ahead of any other party. But Plaid Cymru, in the end, managed to beat Reform by just under 4,000 votes. So they were delighted with that victory. The constituency's new new member of the Senedd, Lindsay Whittle, told me after he'd been elected on stage that this result wasn't just huge for his party, but huge for Wales.
This is a positive vote building up over 50 years. We've done it. It wasn't, think of the polls that everybody was predicting, both Labour and Reform, telling you, it's close. Was that close, 15,000 to 12? That was an emphatic win for Plaid Cymru, the party of Wales, for the people of Wales.
And as Lindsay said there, a vote that we all thought was going to be too close to call. We're all waiting for a recount, if anything, but that didn't come. Plaid Cymru winning 47% of the vote share. And that wasn't the only record set tonight. We also saw 50% of the constituency turn out to vote. And that's not just the highest in Caerphilly, Nick. That is the highest turnout we've ever had for a Senedd by-election here in the Welsh Parliament's history. So you can really see how important it was for people to turn out yesterday to vote. Now, coming in second place, Llyr Powell for Reform UK. He didn't stay on stage to make speeches with his fellow candidates. He was quite frustrated afterwards, to say the least, that they hadn't managed to do it, especially after Reform UK threw everything they had at this by-election. He was confident that they were going to do it, but he told me after he's still confident they'll win in the Senedd elections in May.
Tonight wasn't the night, but if you look at the work we've put in here in this election, the momentum we've built, I'm proud of the campaign we've run, and it's only going to get better. A ground campaign is going to get better, and I think next May we're going to form a Reform government, so I'm looking forward to that.
And we'll have to wait until May, Nick, to see if that becomes the case. But Reform UK still polling very well ahead of those elections in 7 months' time. We'll have to see if Labour can hold on there, unlike they did tonight.
Caitlin, I heard an engine start up while you were... Are you keen to get on the bus and finally get some sleep? Is that what I can hear in the background, Caitlin?
No, what you can hear in the background is people leaving their early morning gym classes, which I can't believe have already come to an end, and we're still here.
Go and get yourself some sleep. Well done reporting through the night. Caitlin Parr, LBC's correspondent in Wales. Now, Aggie Chambray, who's LBC's political correspondent, went down to Wales, spent quite a lot of time speaking with voters, obviously ahead of that by-election. She's in the studio with me now. OK, break down the significance. We have to start, obviously, as Caitlin did, with what this... Well, we have to say congratulations to Plaid. Well done. Great game. Well played and huge for them. What's it mean for Labour, though? Aggie, morning.
Morning, Nick. It's absolutely huge for Labour. It's their first defeat in the area for 100 years. And that is obviously bad for Welsh Labour. But the bad doesn't stop there, Nick, because in just 6 months' time, every single seat in the Senedd in the Welsh Parliament will be up for grabs. So as you say, last week, when it seemed like Labour would lose this seat, I went to Caerphilly, yes, but I also travelled round Wales to see if what we heard in Caerphilly mirrored what we heard elsewhere. So Barry, Port Talbot, Carmarthen, Cardiff and Wrexham to see how people were planning to vote in Caerphilly, but also where else next May.
Plaid Cymru maybe, but I'm like that about reform.
Yeah, I've always been a Plaid voter.
Plaid or Green, I'm not sure.
I'm torn myself personally.
There's no good political party for Wales.
Controversial, but I'm going with reform. I've got
Why?
To. Because I think they're the only ones, or one of the only ones we haven't tried. And I just think we may as well just give them a try and see if they can do any better.
See if they can do any better. Well, one word you didn't hear there, Nick, was Labour. We didn't meet anyone in Wales. Obviously, it's a small sample. You know how it is when you're going out and voxing, but we didn't meet anyone who was definitely planning to vote for Labour, which when you think about the fact that Labour's electoral success in Wales was previously described as one of the longest winning streaks of any political party in the world is astounding. So I asked people too, what's gone wrong with Welsh Labour?
I've lived here my whole life. My grandparents lived here. We lived in the same street. It is quite sad. It never used to be like this around here. It used to be a nice town.
The town is going the other way instead of going forward.
We're quite ignored.
I'm not very impressed with how Labour have run things.
There's only so long you cannot listen to the majority of the public.
People are fed up of Labour. They are sick and tired of it. Everyone voted Labour. Literally, like, I voted Labour, my family voted Labour, you know, my grandparents and so on. And up the valleys especially, Labour has always been a stronghold that people are just sick of.
I've been to see some farmers who have had real worry and angst about the inheritance tax.
So a really plethora of reasons why people aren't planning to vote Welsh Labour next May. They did also talk about the national picture, about Sir Keir Starmer and what's going wrong nationally. I did get an opportunity to, Nick, to speak to the First Minister, Leonard Morgan. Of course, this was last week before this by-election result. But I asked her if she was surprised about the sample of people not planning to vote for Labour.
Well, it's a pretty small sample, and I think the key thing to remember is that we're in a period at the moment where people are still struggling with their bills, they're struggling with cost of living, and they are looking for quicker answers than are coming. And I guess that's what the pressure on us now is, to get those answers to them quicker.
Huge pressure on Welsh Labour. She did also say that she thinks they have the opportunity and time to make sure they can turn things around by next May. But as one senior Welsh Labour source said to me, if people are not voting Labour here, where are they voting Labour? A question, Nick, I think will be haunting Labour strategists this morning.
And we'll be hearing from Nick Thomas-Symonds, who, of course, is a Labour MP, Labour Minister, indeed, and it has a Labour constituency as well later in this show. Aggie Chambray, LBC's political correspondent, thanks for that. 13 after 7. Let's get an interpretation on that now from Nadine Dorries, who, of course, is a former senior Conservative. Indeed, she served as a culture secretary. She's defected to Reform UK last month. She's also a journalist, a regular columnist for the Daily Mail. She joins me now. Let me take you through the tale of the tape, Nadine, if I may. This Senate election by constituency in 2021, the Reform UK candidate got a 2% share, 495 votes. Last night, the Reform UK candidate got a 36% share with 12,113 votes, but just didn't do it. What's your message to Reform voters? Nadine Dorries, morning.
Morning. So that was an increase in the vote share of 34.2%, if I'm right on those figures, which is actually incredible, considering that Plaid had for decades a ground network across Wales and well established in Wales, or well known in Wales, and reform came in from nowhere. So in that context, that Reform just landed in Wales from nowhere to get 36% of the vote share is actually quite incredible.
But why not over the line, Nadine Dorries?
Because it's Wales. It's Wales. If you transferred that into a 34.2% increase in the vote share into seats across England, you would possibly see almost the wipeout of both Conservative and Labour seats. The number of Labour MPs and Conservative MPs who are sat on small majorities, who would be absolutely taken away in a tsunami of a vote share of 34.2%. This is seismic, Nick. Don't underestimate the size of that vote share in Wales. It's Wales where Plaid have seats in the Senate. They don't have local elections actually until 2027, but Plaid is well established in Wales. They've always had a percentage of the vote share. I'm not sure what their vote share increased by, but it is incredible that Reform had 36% of the vote. Do not underestimate the
All the projections and all the ideas coming out of Reform was that it would be a Reform victory yet again. Albeit you performed well, but the party has come up short. There's no win, Nadine Dorries.
No, but it's Wales. So personally, I have never said that. Right. I've never said that we would win in Wales. And I know a lot of people didn't. I'm not even sure that many people in Reform thought that we would win in Wales. The objective was always, I believe, to do our very best, which we did. If we'd won, that was great. But to come second, I tell you, there will be no tears in Reform today.
Tears in Reform. As a former Conservative cabinet minister, the Conservative vote has gone from 17% last time out, and it's gone to 2% last night. What will be going on at Conservative central command?
Nick, when I defected to Reform, I was the first person to say the Tory party is dead. It's dead. And I think that figure last night shows it's over.
Enjoy speaking with Nadine Dorries. Thank you. Check out Nadine's column regularly in the Daily Mail, former Conservative MP and former Culture Secretary, now, of course, a member of Reform UK. 16 minutes after 7, we'll be hearing from someone, actually, who served as a special advisor to Rishi Sunak as PM, who grew up in Caerphilly, for his take on this as well. And then later in the show, can this now be the bloody end to the bloody Sunday vendetta? Northern Ireland's Veterans Commissioner David Johnson, after that verdict.
Soldier F has faced legal scrutiny for more than a quarter of a century, and it is my hope that today's ruling brings that long and arduous process to a close.
Just turned 7:17, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Plaid Cymru has defeated Reform UK in a fiercely fought Senedd by-election in the former Labour stronghold of Caerphilly. Sir Keir Starmer is to host leaders including Volodymyr Zelensky for talks on Ukraine. And the Prime Minister's told LBC that plans for digital ID will bring Britain into the modern age. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most places, cloudier in the northeast, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Very slow on the M25, anti-clockwise to junction 26 at Waltham Abbey. There's been an accident and one lane is closed. Also delays on the A13 westbound to just after the Blackwood Tunnel exit, also after an accident. Queues on the North Circular Road eastbound to Henley's Corner, and in Oxshott, the A244 Warren Lane is closed both ways, also after an accident, and that's causing delays. On the Underground, the Northern Line is suspended northbound between Battersea Power Station and Camden Town via Charing Cross. It's because a train's broken down. Southwestern Railway can't run westbound between Brentford and Hounslow, and also between Aldershot and Ascot both ways. The overnight works are still taking place.
This is LBC.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T. Stop up on island fuel. R. Rest every 2 hours too. I. Inspect tire pressure and tread. P. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with
TRIP. Think. Do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Big, big, big motoring world. Wow, wow, wow motoring world.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £45 million.
It's so exciting, I could do the splits.
Oh, should have stretched first.
Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT, protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
20 minutes after 7, headlines in a moment, but making political headlines. This is extraordinary result down in Caerphilly. Privileged to bring into the conversation Jack Sellers. Now, Jack was a special advisor to Rishi Sunak as Prime Minister, and he grew up in Caerphilly, and so, of course, makes him doubly relevant, really, for this conversation. Thanks for coming on board, sir. Can I start out? I'm concerned, realise that many of my listeners are not really that aware of Caerphilly, apart from your excellent crumbly cheese. If I asked you to give me a pen picture of the area, how would you describe it, Jack? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me. I mean, how would I describe it? It's a sort of former mining town sat just above Cardiff, just above the M4. And it's basically it's like the cereal bowl at the bottom of the valleys, all the valleys sort of offshoot of the town, essentially.
What work is there to do?
Heavy, obviously back in the days it used to be a heavy sort of mining town, but now it's lots of manufacturing. There's lots of services like sort of call centres and the like, you know, the friendly Welsh people sort of leading that charge. Right. Your traditional sort of left behind town in many ways, you know, the towns which Boris Johnson in 2019 wanted to level up. For me, Caerphilly is the absolute epitome of that sort of description.
From 2019 to 2025, breakdown last night's result, or actually this morning's result in reality, for the two main parties. Start with Labour or Conservative. Don't mind who you go with first, Jack.
I mean, well, I'll go with Conservative first. I mean, look, 2%. I mean, look, taking a step back, the Conservatives have historically never done well in Caerphilly, just putting that sort of out there. I mean, they are normally on 16%, all right, which is obviously about 5% above where Labour ended up last night. So Conservatives, it's never really been much of a fighting ground. The valleys as a whole have never really been much of a fighting ground. So, I mean, but having said that, going to be an extremely disappointing result, getting 2%, you know, that's going to put some stark readings on the radar ahead of May. Mm. But look, for me, Nick, I just want to take a step back in this. You know, I grew up in Caerphilly and I was there until I was 22. And, you know, Caerphilly was just never talked about as sort of a political fighting ground. No one ever knocked doors. It was so safe for Labour that it was just never really on the radar. I sort of take a step back right now and I think, well, you know, it's actually nice that people are taking things seriously and political winds are sort of changing, whatever way that is. But just going back to your question on the Labour point, I mean, extremely disappointing night, right? I mean, if this is a signal of things to come in 7 months' time, then, you know, Starmer's going to face some historic records, which I don't think he would have wanted.
Plaid, understandably, are saying what happens in Caerphilly could happen across the whole of Wales. They would say that, wouldn't they? But how, in reality, how would you assess that assertion, Jack?
I agree with them. I genuinely agree. Look, this Caerphilly is now this by election result overnight is a spotlight of what the May election is going to be. And I think Plaid have got a very good chance, you know, of sweeping up across the board. I think if anything we learned from last night, like over the last year, Plaid and Reform have been leading the polls in Wales, but it's been too close to sort of call. So now what we've got from the Caerphilly election is a bit more concrete evidence of how the voting patterns will sort of change and how people will move over to different parties. And people better equipped than I to do the political analysis of elections can now use this data to sort of forecast a bit more accurately, probably ahead of May. Because you've got to, just for your listeners might not know this, but actually in May, the Welsh system is changing. You know, we've currently got 60 Welsh parliamentarians, it's going up to 96. It's fresh meat in terms of like, how do you analyze what's going to happen? So the Caerphilly one, result is going to help in that respect. Okay. But I think for us, for last night, it sets the stall that this is Plaid's election to lose. And Reform and Nigel Farage, they've still got a bit of way to go to make the damage that everyone thought they potentially could.
Okay, lastly, Jack, and that's the point I wanted to make. There are two ways of looking at this, which is an extraordinary performance for Reform. They went from 2% last time in that particular constituency to something like 37%, I think it was. 36%. So that's 2 to 36%. But yet again, they promised they would win, and they come up short. So what is the reality for Reform UK in your view, Jack?
The reality is, I think they'll be going away from this and considering this sort of, united left front. Look, one thing I'd say, Nick, when Starmer came out of his conference a few weeks ago, he clearly made it Farage versus Starmer. For Starmer in England, he's obviously trying to unite the left and galvanise the left around Labour so that they, hold their nose and vote Labour no matter what the pain, because Farage is too much of a threat. That tactic will not work in Wales and Scotland because the left will galvanise around someone else. So Farage, what he needs to take away from today is how do they convince just some more of those sort of progressive left voters that Reform are worth the risk?
All right. Thanks for all your background and your input. Jack Sellers, former special advisor to Rishi Sunak when he was PM. And, of course, speaking as a Carefully native, 7:25, quickly through the headlines. Took them a bit late because I didn't want to keep Mr. Sellers waiting. The end of the bloody Sunday, or at least this particular trial, the Daily Mail says now end the witch hunt. Similar sentiment on the front page of the Daily Telegraph. The Times tells us the grooming inquiry could be off until next year, which is quite extraordinary. And does it underscore the theory that we were discussing yesterday that it's rather inconvenient for a Labour government to realise that I think universally, or certainly the vast majority of the local authorities involved, are all Labour. And unsurprisingly for a couple of the other papers, the Daily Express, the Sun, Tess and Claude's secret pact to quit, or we are strictly done dancing, as the Daily Express Natalie puts it, to the LBC app. That gives you all the details you need on that Carefully by-election. Let's choose one other website at random, and I've landed on The Independent, and they've got some very moving pictures, actually, of King Charles, as they say, becoming the first Church of England head, reminding you he is the supreme governor, to pray with the Pope since the days of Henry VIII. And I think it probably speaks well to the innate goodness of the two men there, the King and the Pope, that's come about. So let's hope that the years of concern and even fear between the two churches can start to abate. On to other matters. And as you've already heard on the LBC News bulletins, the BMA, British Medical Association, has announced a fresh round of strikes in England after talks broke down with the government. There's been dialogue, I read, apparently, throughout the summer and early autumn since the last walkout. Let's get more details now. Dr. Jack Fletcher chairs the BMA's Resident Doctors Committee. Remember, they were junior, they're now resident doctors. Joins me now. Doctor, can you tell me what's caused the breakdown? What is it that you're seeking on behalf of this body of men and women? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for having me. The crucial thing that we're asking for and we're looking to fix is jobs for doctors. We've got unemployed doctors up and down this country because we've got a crisis where doctors can't get jobs, they can't get on, they can't become the A&E doctors, the GPs of the future. You and I both know how difficult it is to get a GP appointment in the morning. You can look at any A&E department and they're accused down the corridor, patients being treated in the corridor, out the front of the hospital sometimes. And yet we have thousands of doctors who are looking for work who can't find jobs. We did meet with the government. We did put forward proposals. We have been in dialogue, but sadly, these proposals just aren't moving far enough or fast enough to be able to get doctors back into work and also, crucially, get the waiting lists down, get patients treated, and try and get doctors caring for patients again.
Well, the background is apparently this year there were more than 30,000 applicants for 10,000 jobs at this stage. Young men and women spend a lot of their life and a lot of money training to be doctors, and then they can't do it. Why? What is the problem here? Why are we not finding posts for them, Doctor?
So after the first 2 years of doctors, when they're fully qualified, they have to apply to be a specialist. So, for example, at that point, that's the point that you choose to be a GP. That's the point that you choose to be a surgeon or an A&E doctor. And sadly, due to decades of failure in workforce planning, as you rightly allude to, we've got people committing years of their lives to their degree. The taxpayer invests hundreds of thousands of pounds in their education. And yet we now have this group of individuals who just want to get on with their careers, they just want to progress, and yet they can't because there aren't any jobs. We've asked the government with some specific proposals, and with regret, the proposals that have been put forward by the government don't go far enough, don't go fast enough. We're talking about solutions in 2 years' time, whereas actually what we're seeing is consistently waiting lists going up for the last 3 months, and we want to fix that.
As I understand it, this is one of your two grievances with the BMA, the other being an issue of pay. If this very worthy cause that you're campaigning for, it seems extraordinary that we can't get doctors into jobs of doctors. If that was to be fixed, would you shelve your demand for a 29% pay increase?
So, just to be clear, what we're asking for, we don't just need those doctors back in the NHS. We also need to retain the doctors that we currently have. And what we saw in the last year was record numbers of doctors. We had more doctors in the last decade applying for the paperwork to be able to leave the NHS. What we're asking for is to value the doctors that are currently in the NHS. Pay is an issue, and we consistently say that. However, what we are looking to do is work sustainably with the government over a number of years to rectify that. We're not asking for a 29% pay rise in one go. We're not asking for it in 1 or 2 years. What we're asking for is a sustainable pay rise to value the doctors that are currently in the NHS, but crucially, get those doctors who are unemployed back into work.
But this is the 13th time that you'll go on strike, that you and your colleagues will go on strike since March 2023, and you've enjoyed pay rise of 28.9% over the past 3 years. I understand now that a doctor can earn £49,000, including overtime and premium, £10,000 more than the average full-time worker. What makes your case so special?
So, doctors are the first people, in my hospital, if someone's heart stops, I'm the most senior doctor in the hospital, and I'm called, and I immediately attend overnight. I'll be on shift in next week and the week after, and what we're asking for, we don't think it's unreasonable to ask for as little as £2 extra an hour over the next few years.
Well, 29% over the next 3 years is the reality, isn't it?
So we're open to negotiate. We're open to negotiate the specifics of that, but it could be as little as £2 an hour over the next few years for the most senior doctors in the hospital overnight, the brain surgeons, the A&E doctors who lead the crash calls, lead the major trauma, £2 an hour extra for those experts, and just £1 an hour extra potentially around that figure for newly qualified doctors. That's all we're asking for. We're looking to do it in a sustainable way, and we think that's a reasonable ask, as well as putting those doctors back into work to get patients tracked.
Grateful for your time today. Thanks for the work you and all your colleagues do day in, day out. Dr. Jack Fletcher chairs the BMA's Resident Doctors Committee. We'll take your reactions on that. The 13th strike since 2023. 29% pay increase, that's tough, but 10,000 jobs for 30,000 people who've done all that training, that can't be right either. We'll come back to that conversation. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, on LBC. The 7:30 news is read by Thomas Watts.
Plaid Cymru has won the Welsh Parliament by-election in Caerphilly. Lindsay Whittle, who took 47% of the vote, finished ahead of Reform in second and Labour in a distant third. Leaders, including Volodymyr Zelensky, will gather in London later to discuss the war in Ukraine. The Prime Minister will call for Kiev to be given more long-range weapons to step up the pressure on Russia. The police watchdog has warned there are still significant challenges in how police tackle grooming gangs. A report says progress is being made, but there are still shortcomings in coordination with other agencies. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most places, cloudier with heavier rain in the northeast, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Harwoods, we know your car says a lot about you. Maybe that you like to make an entrance, or you'd rather make your escape. That you want to cut a dash, or just cut your emissions. That you like to take the bends, or bring your four-legged friends. Whatever, we speak your language. Come and have a chat at Harwoods Audi Crawley and Five Oaks and Harwoods Volvo Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. Harwoods, family owned since 1931.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty is actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new £1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
I'm now a fully qualified teacher, and it all started with inspiring future teachers. Training locally meant I could learn in real classrooms with support from expert teachers right on my doorstep. I can honestly say it was just the best experience. And now I'm inspiring the next generation day in, day out. and you can too, whether in secondary or primary school.
Train to teach locally with Inspiring Future Teachers. Apply today or see what we have to offer at inspiringfutureteachers.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
7:34, more of your reactions concerning that seismic carefully election result in a moment. Into the world of finance. Some figures have just dropped concerning retail data. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, will tell us what they are and then tell us their significance. Morning, Christian.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, a little bit of good news to end the week. Retail sales were 0.9% higher over the period July to September 2025 than the previous 3 months. Now, analysts have put this down to fine weather in July and August. They note that, unfortunately, food sales and food store sales did not fare so well. And that's not surprising when you consider the inflationary pressures and food price inflation has been particularly spicy. So it was really driven by the sort of leisure clothing outlets over July and August. Those figures are quite strong. They could feed into slightly better growth for the period than we have previously seen. So we'll be looking out for that when the next quarterly GDP figures are released. But it's still worth noting that overall retail sales are still below their pre-pandemic levels, still about 3% down from where they were averaging before the pandemic. And the latest consumer confidence figures out this morning still paint a bit of a gloomy picture. People are understandably worried about where things might end up after the budget. I think the consumer confidence figures did tick up moderately from about minus 16 to minus 12, so still in pretty negative territory. But a little bit of boost in the retail sector, albeit not quite roaring, that we'd like to see.
You mentioned the budget. The latest chatter on the front page of the Eye and other newspapers is a potential 1p income tax rise. What would that yield? What's the story behind that, Christian?
Well, the story behind it is the Chancellor's pressing need to find about £25 billion worth of tax in the budget. And what it would mean is, apart from anything else, an almighty political row, given that the Chancellor, the Prime Minister, everybody else has insisted from their manifesto last year onwards that they will not be raising income tax or VAT. But it appears now, according to reports overnight, that the Treasury and the Chancellor are actively looking at increasing the basic rate of income tax by 1p. Now, that could yield about £9 billion for the Chancellor. So that political row comes with a price tag. If they wanted to raise the rates on the higher rate or the additional rate, there are fewer people paying that, so it actually raises less money. But there becomes a political fairness argument. All sorts of rows would kick off. And I think it goes to show actually quite how difficult it is proving for the numbers to add up in the budget, which is coming at the end of November.
Why has President Trump gone Canada dry in trade talks?
They're on, they're off, they're off again now, that's for sure. Trade tariff talks. So trade talks with Canada have been ongoing since levies were imposed. And a regional government in Canada put out a video overnight quoting heavily, drawing heavily on Ronald Reagan and a speech he made in 1987 about tariffs. And I was this close to doing an impression of Ronald Reagan, but I'll save it for another day. I think I've got it down to a T, but it's all in the rhythm, but I'll do it another day for you, I promise. But he says that he made the point in 1987 that nobody wins from tariffs, that that industry shut down, millions of people will lose their jobs, and nobody wins. President Trump has reacted furiously at this and has immediately suspended the ongoing trade talks. Trump is not happy at all. He says trade negotiations hereby terminated. He's furious that this great Republican presidential figure could be thrown in his face like that by some Canadian politicians.
Time for one more. You're the city expert. Which story do you think we need to tell the listeners about, Christian?
Well, I think we could just take a moment to consider some of the impacts of the Employment Rights Bill. Now becoming law, there are all sorts of consultation documents spilling out of it, one of which we obtained yesterday, which shows the efforts of the government to cook up a new plan for trade unions and their relationships with business. And they represent quite a change in the way that trade unions have access to workplaces. And the government is considering a plan to give trade unions weekly access to businesses' premises. with fines of up to £75,000 and more to be dished out to companies who don't grant access to trade union officials and representatives. At the moment, there are all sorts of official routes through which employers and trade unions negotiate access and meetings, etc. One of the considerations now coming out of the Employment Rights Bill is that the government will make it a whole lot easier, give quite substantial powers to trade union officials to enter places of work and conduct their union activities. And the unions are very happy about this. The Tories are less happy about this. And I expect a lot of businesses would also be quite unhappy about a shake-up to the arrangements as well. But that was our exclusive in City AM today.
Grateful for that. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. Enjoy your weekend. We look forward to a President Trump impersonation not too far off. 7:40 is the time. Now, let's just feature some of the emails that are coming in on that Welsh decision, or Welsh election, sorry, not decision, Welsh result, election result. Tony says, Reform UK polled 36%, which is consistent with over 115 opinion polls across the UK. This should be seen as a rock-solid performance. Dave Robinson in a Boyne. Surely the result in Wales is unsurprising. Barely half the electorate turned out, and those who did chose to give the incumbents a bloody nose. Well, the key there is, Mr. Robinson, it's the highest turnout, as Aggie Chambray, our political correspondent, was saying, it's the highest turnout you've ever seen. So, all right, 50%. There's 50% who didn't bother. But if it's the highest, I think it possibly did engage. James says Welsh Labour brought in the 20-mile speed limit and built up areas very unpopular. They reap what they sow. And on the subject of the junior doctor, resident doctors, my apologies, Luke says, you really disappoint yourself. You'll happily sing the praises of big business, the effect their profits can't be touched, but you've just asked a doctor what makes his case so special over the average worker. Let's hope you don't need one anytime soon. Meanwhile, CB says, the fact this body has the cheek to ask for £2 an hour extra, as if it's hardly anything, when most other public sector bodies are looking at pay rise of £2 extra a day, tells the public everything they need to know. And I'm just going to read this out from Terry Hayes. A belated good morning from Dulwich. I hope the weather is nice for you at Penshurst this morning and you don't get stuck in traffic. I'll spend the morning doing administrative duties and I look forward to our meeting tomorrow morning in Wimbledon. Do have a lovely day, my love. Three kisses. I don't think that's meant for me because I'm not going to be in Wimbledon later that day. But if you want to send it to the right person, that might help. Right, let's come to other matters. And more than half a century after Bloody Sunday left Londonderry scarred, the only soldier charged with murder over the massacre has been acquitted. Notwithstanding the appalling suffering that the families of the 13 unarmed civilians who were killed have been through and the gravity of that, this is something that has been addressed for years. The Bloody Sunday inquiry cost the thick end of £200 million and resulted in part of this apology from Prime Minister David Cameron in 2010.
The government is ultimately responsible for the conduct of the armed forces, and for that, on behalf of the government, indeed on behalf of our country, I am deeply sorry.
And here's the Northern Ireland Veterans Commissioner David Johnson giving his reaction outside Belfast Crown Court yesterday.
Soldier F has faced legal scrutiny in various forms for more than a quarter of a century, and it is my hope that today's ruling by Judge Lynch brings that long and arduous process to a close.
But what is the chances of that? Can this verdict be, pardon my language, I know I've said it before, an end to the bloody vendetta against these elderly sex servicemen? Robin Horsfall is a former SAS soldier, founder of the Northern Ireland Veterans Movement. Mr. Horsfall, what do you take from yesterday, sir? Good morning.
Well, good morning, Nick. It's a relief to find that, you know, the courts have carried out a process and come out with a sensible verdict in the end. But the whole process is political. It wasn't about guilt or innocence. It wasn't really about getting satisfaction or some kind of resolution. It was a continuing narrative by the Republican movement to convince the current generation of voters that the British Army were there as oppressors, the state was under martial law, and that they committed atrocities. And that process will continue.
You were in the Paris, you served five tours of Northern Ireland. What are your memories of that, Mr. Horsfall?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. I did three with the Paris, one in the Ardoyne in Belfast, the next in the Ballymurphy in Belfast, then in South Armagh, then two undercover with the SAS. But my earliest memories are of the appalling poverty that I saw in the Catholic community, especially in Northern Ireland in the early years, and the dreadful circumstances that people were living under there, the intense hatred that existed between the two communities, and how it was being used constantly for political purposes, the amount of hatred towards the army. I mean, I didn't go there until 1975, but the intense hatred that existed by that time towards the army was quite shocking when you consider that it was part of the United Kingdom.
How confident are you that this might be an end to these various cases that are brought against some of your former colleagues?
Well, no, it won't be an end. As I said, it's not about finding guilt. It's not about resolution. It's about a continuing political narrative. It's about trying to, it's about Sinn Féin maintaining their position as the majority in Northern Ireland now. It's about them continuing to hold on to that and divide the community. Power in Northern Ireland for both sides relies on keeping that division between the people, because it's where they get their votes from.
Good speaking with you. Best wishes to you and all your former colleagues. Robin Horsfall, former SAS soldier, founder of the Northern Ireland Veterans Movement, served as a para and served five tours of Northern Ireland, some of them as a paratrooper, some of them undercover with the SAS. Coming up directly after the news, the Labour Party reaction to that humiliating defeat in Caerphilly. Then later in the show, an NHS doctor accused of celebrating the October 7 Hamas attacks, or a distinctive necklace charm of the number 7, as in October the 7th, number 7 to a hearing. Here is that doctor speaking earlier this year at a pro-Palestinian rally.
I'm already smeared as an anti-Semite, and I mean, my top says anti-Semitic Semite club.
If you were Jewish, would you want to be treated by Dr. Rahma Aladwan, who's at that tribunal? We'll look at that later in the show. 7:46, LBC News headlines now. Thomas Watts.
Plaid Cymru have ended Labour's 100-year hold on Caerphilly in the Senedd by-election. Leaders, including Volodymyr Zelensky, will gather in London later to discuss the war in Ukraine. And watchdogs warn there are still significant challenges in how police tackle grooming gangs. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most. Wetter in the northeast, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic's being held on the western stretch of the M25 clockwise, just after junction 16 at the M40. It's because of an accident and there are queues of about 5 miles on the approach. Also on the M25, it's slow for about 2 miles anti-clockwise, junction 26 at Waltham Abbey following an accident. Delays continue on the A13 westbound to the North Circular Road because the lorry's broken down, and then it's slow to just after the Blackwall Tunnel exit after an accident. Delays on the A10 southbound from the M25 to Ballsmore Lane, a lorry's broken down. In Enfield, the Hertford Road is partially blocked both ways at Turkey Street after an accident. And on the Underground, the Piccadilly line remains suspended from Uxbridge to Rayners Lane.
LBC.
Don't miss the Dunelm Autumn event with huge discounts on thousands of products. Get your space all set this season with offers on lighting, bedding, mattresses, curtains, furniture and more. Save on thousands of products in the Dunelm Autumn event. In-store and online now with free click and collect in as little as 2 hours. Dunelm,
the home of homes.
T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
You know how fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because sound is the most effective way to tell the players they're rubbish. Works in advertising too. Because when you amplify your advertising using radio, your campaign is 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. And 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60 and charges apply. Max saving £20. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
When's the perfect moment to take that leap? With electric vehicles, that moment is now. The all-electric Leap Motor T03. Right now with the Leap Grant, it's incredible value at 169 deposit and 169 per month with 0% APR. With amazing tech and spec too. Leap Motor. It's time to leap. Search Leap Motor T03. Personal contract purchase, Mint Green, T03, 48 months. Optional final payment, 5675. Leap Motor is credit broker, not in lender. Subject to status. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protect your small business and understand cybersecurity.
I would have got it. It's 10 minutes before 8. We'll come back to your views of that carefully result in just a moment. But let's come into the conversation. Nick Thomas Symonds, who's a senior Labour MP, indeed he's Paymaster General and Minister for European Union Relations. And Minister, I know you want to, and I will, we will talk about the importance of the global leaders meeting taking place later today as part of Coalition of the Willing. We will talk about that, I give you my word, but we must start with the result down in Caerphilly for the Labour Party. And when I tell you the leading poll watcher, Professor Sir John Curtis, says the alarm bells are ringing in an area where they used to weigh the Labour vote, how do you respond? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good to join you. And listen, but before we very rightly address that issue, could I just say a word, if I may, about having David's
family? Of course.
Because nobody would have wanted the by-election in these circumstances, of course, across politics. I've been thinking of his family in recent days. And just a word about Richard Tunnicliffe, the Welsh Labour candidate, who conducted a positive campaign against that very difficult backdrop. But look, you put the point directly to me. Like, of course, this is, you know, disappointing result. I'm not hiding from that for a moment. I've been out on the doorsteps, Nick, as you can imagine. The constituency is very close to my own.
Yes, so I've been
knocking doors in Caerphilly. And what's been coming through to me very strongly is a frustration with the pace of change. People want us to go faster with the pace of change. We've had thousands of conversations on the doorstep. We've listened. We treat the result with humility. We will then act upon that, redouble our efforts in the 6 months before the Senate election. Look,
what does that mean? Redouble your efforts in what?
So what it means is there's obviously some big moments coming up over the next 6 or 7 months. There's obviously the budget in Westminster, but there's really importantly too the budget here in Wales as well. There's also then the funds that we've been announcing, neighbourhood board that we got here in Torvine. But also there are measures we've already taken, Nick, around things like the freezing of fuel duty, the largest financial settlement in the history of devolution, and we're trying to make sure that is feeding through into frontline public services. It is in our NHS and bringing down our waiting lists. But above all, we are listening, Nick. I've been on the doorsteps myself. I've had these conversations.
Why didn't Sir Keir Starmer go to Caerphilly? Why is he not an asset?
Well, I think the Prime Minister is an asset, and I think we'll come on to talk about him on the international stage.
We will. I promise you we'll do that. We will. But why didn't he go to Wales? Does he understand Wales?
Yes, he does. I've known the Prime Minister for many, many years, and he certainly does. But in terms of visit, what's happened here is that Welsh Labour has led our campaign. It is an election for the Senedd. Leonard Morgan, the First Minister of Wales, has taken that leading role and, you know, has campaigned in Caerphilly.
And not very successfully.
I'm not suggesting the result is a success.
We have to say this is the first defeat in more than 100 years. It brings to end one of the longest winning streaks in democracy for Labour in Wales. And respectfully, and I know you, and you're a decent bloke, all you can say is, yes, yes, we feel very humbled and we're listening and we'll do better. Is that the best you got?
Well, look, I'm also, in addition to being a MP and a minister, a historian of the Labour Party. So me, of all people, understands the significance of the history and the result that we've seen. But also, Nick, when I'm talking about humility, I'm talking about the conversations and that are not just me, but obviously many other politicians and activists have had in Caerphilly. And when you have a message, you listen to the message. And that's what I've tried to do. I've been on your show when we've won by-elections handsomly.
You have.
Your show when we've lost them. And I think you you will always say I never overshoot the wins either. And I'm here to say we've listened to what's said to us. And that's what you do as a politician when you have by-elections. You listen to what's been put to you and you seek to act on it.
And lastly on this, what are you going to do to ensure that you're not wiped out at the Senate next year?
Look, we have 6 months to the Senate elections. We have local elections in Wales the year after. It'll be about demonstrating in word and in deed that having a Labour government in Cardiff and a Labour government at the other end of the M4 is the best for Wales's prosperity and for the people of Wales.
Well, the people of Caerphilly don't think that, Nick, do they?
Well, look, I've had the message very strongly from the Doors in Caerphilly, Nick, but we will both be putting forward our positive case, but also making the case that against our, as you'd expect us to do, against our political opponents, against the division of Reform, and by the way, in the course of this campaign, Reform's leader, former leader in Wales, admitted taking bribes to spread Putin's propaganda, so we'd be exposing other parties as well.
All right. Let's move to Sir Keir Starmer. Before we get on to the Coalition of the Willing, what has he said to you about the result in Caerphilly this morning?
I haven't caught up with him yet, Nick. I'm sure that I will do post the work.
So you're the government minister, quotes, on the round. You also happen to be a Welsh MP with a constituency a good football kick away from Caerphilly. And the Prime Minister doesn't think to give you a call in the morning, Nick, let's just focus on ABC. What does that say of his concerns for Wales?
The Prime Minister is 100% concerned about Wales, and I've no doubt...
So he didn't go there, and he doesn't ring you after the result, and you're the bloke who's got the hospital pass to do the media. And you're telling me he cares about Wales. He's not even phoned you.
I wouldn't expect a call. I'm sure that the candidate, our candidate, and I'm sure the Alex Bowers-Curtis, who did a great job running our campaign, a lot of effort into it, will certainly have been contacted by the Prime Minister. I wouldn't expect a call today, but I'm sure we will catch up after the important international work he's doing.
Now, let's talk about that. What is taking place? We have global leaders now coming in person to London. What do you hope is achieved, Nick?
Fundamentally, Nick, the central objective is increasing pressure on Putin. That's what the objective of this is today, because it is Putin who is the block to peace and seeking peace in Ukraine. So what are the kind of things we want to see? We want to try and take Russian oil and gas off the global market. We want also to finish the job on the frozen Russian sovereign assets, essentially so we can use them to unlock billions of pounds to fund Ukraine's defences. And thirdly, supplying long-range capabilities, so by that I mean missiles, to Ukraine going into the winter months, which obviously has jobs benefits here in the United Kingdom as well. But fundamentally, it is about that message to Putin and action to ramp up the pressure, because it is Putin who is playing for time, Putin who is the one who is not coming to the table and engaging.
How will we know if this summit is a success?
I think you will first of all, it's what comes out of the talks today and the progress on the three issues that I've talked about. I think you will hopefully see progress on those things. But a lot of this, I have to say, Nick, is about Putin. It is about, if you look, the American administration wants peace in Ukraine. In fact, President Trump has only this week sanctioned two Russian oil giants. Across Europe, we want to ramp up the pressure. So that is what we will continue to do, because every day matters in Ukraine. The Ukrainian people under threat of Russian drones and other attacks, but also the front line in eastern Ukraine, where we know daily this matters.
Will long-range weapons feature on the agenda, Minister?
They will. They will indeed. And I think that the Prime Minister will announce the acceleration of missile delivery going into this winter. We think it's really important that Ukraine has that capacity to continue its own self-defence.
And further sanctions on Russia? Attempts to stop purchasing their gas? Whatever else it might be? Minister.
Yes, that's exactly what we will look to see. And also, as I say, the finishing the job on the Russian sovereign assets as well, which is hugely important. And it's about a number of dimensions of support for Ukraine, whether that is in terms of military hardware, whether that is in terms of financial support as well, but also showing this unity in the coalition of the willing to Putin is massively important as well.
All right, finishing with Sir Keir Starmer, final observation. Do you think if he spent a little more time in Wales rather than Washington, there might have been a better result this morning?
No, because I think that what we do on the international stage is fundamental to delivering at home. I was with the Prime Minister in Copenhagen earlier this month, we got 16 countries to sign up to looking at how we interpret the Refugee Convention and the European Convention on Human Rights in the 2020s to tackle illegal migration. We wouldn't have got that if we hadn't been out there making the case on the international stage.
Grateful for your time, Nick Thomas-Symonds, Paymaster General, Minister for European Union Relations, so very significant as regards that summit. And I hope that goes well, obviously, for the European nations and, of course, for the fight in Ukraine. All right, the music means we move on, and we have another 13th now resident doctor strike, 13th since 2023. Dr. Jack Fletcher, Chair of the BMA's Resident Doctors Committee, told me earlier in the hour,
if someone's heart stops, I'm the most senior doctor in the hospital, and I'm called and I immediately attend overnight. We don't think it's unreasonable to ask for as little as £2 extra an hour over the next few years.
Plus, remember, build, baby, build. Well, now affordable housing targets will be cut in the push for new homes. And you'll be hearing from the Reverend Jonathan Aitken. Remember him? Who's saying, might it be time to show some compassion and mercy to Prince Andrew? Those stories are more after the news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Plaid Cymru have won a battle with Reform UK to win the Senedd by-election in Caerphilly. Lindsay Whittle took nearly half of the vote ahead of Reform's Clear Powell on 36% and Labour's Richard Tunnicliffe on just 11%. The area has returned Labour MPs and MSs for 100 years. The winner, Mr Whittle, described it as the dawn of a new beginning.
I look forward to playing my part for New Wales, and in particular for the people of the Caerphilly constituency. I thank you with all of my heart. This is better than scoring the winning try for Wales against New Zealand in the Rugby World Cup. This means everything to me.
LBC's Wales correspondent Caitlin Parr says it's also a disappointing result for Reform.
They threw absolutely everything into this by-election, deploying Nigel Farage onto the streets of Caerphilly multiple times, including today. He wasn't at the count tonight, though. But they didn't manage to do it. Plaid Cymru, they pipped Reform UK to the post by just under 4,000 votes in the end.
A meeting of the so-called Coalition of the Willing will be held in London later. Keir Starmer will urge allies to increase Ukraine's supply of long-range weapons to strike back at Russia. Volodymyr Zelensky will be among the leaders taking part in the talks. The Prime Minister's told LBC that digital ID will cut faff and make people's lives easier.
Proving who you are, what your date of birth is, where you live, will just be able to be done with digital ID.
The Prime Minister's been setting out his wider vision for the system in an exclusive article on the LBC app. Critics have raised privacy and security concerns, but Keir has insisted it is necessary to bring Britain into the modern age. A report says there are still significant challenges in how police tackle child sexual exploitation and grooming gangs. The HMIC watchdog says progress is being made, but raised concerns about data sharing and coordination. Separately, sources have warned it could take months to find a chair for the troubled National Grooming Gangs inquiry. The cyber attack on Jaguar Land Rover led to a 27% fall in car production in the UK last month. Britain's largest car maker suspended work at its factories for 5 weeks after being targeted by hackers. In the city, the FTSE 100's just reopening at 95.78. It closed up 63 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most, cloudier with heavier rain in northeastern parts of the country. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's News for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £45 million. It's so exciting, I could do the splits. Oh, should have stretched first. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after eight, Friday, October the 24th. I've said it before. In fact, I imagine I've probably said it 13 times since 2023. But the doctor won't see you now as resident doctors announce strike days in November. We'll give you the full background. We've sort of boiled it down. There are two main grievances, one which seems very valid. Thousands, literally thousands of mostly young men and women complete their training and there are no jobs to go to. That cannot be right, but Equally, an additional 29% pay raise over a number of years, is that right either? We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, Housing Secretary Steve Reid spoke with me earlier in the month about the lack of house building in London.
It's absolutely shocking, the failure to get house building going. It's not just in London, it's across the whole country.
How do they plan to put that right? Well, by cutting what is the proportion of what's called affordable housing. But what constitutes affordable housing, particularly in a city or a region like London? And later in the hour, you'll be hearing from Jonathan Aitken, the Reverend Jonathan Aitken, my apologies, the former Conservative Cabinet Minister, of course, disgraced in his career. He was sentenced to 18 months for perjury. He says it's time to show some compassion, some mercy towards Prince Andrew. Well, LBC's been on the streets of York thinking what, seeing what they think of their former Duke.
Probably shouldn't still be a prince as well.
I actually don't think he should be called a prince anymore because his behaviour is just outrageous.
I mean, it's just been the sorriest state all the way. I mean, it's awful, really.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
That's later in the hour. Could you show compassion, mercy towards Prince Andrew? We'll talk about that. But I've said it before, I'll say it again. The doctor will not see you now for the 13th time since March 2023. Resident doctors, formerly known as junior, will be staging multi-day strike. Walkouts set to take place between November 14th and November the 19th. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is furious. He says these are irresponsible.
After a 28.9% pay rise and the offer from me and this government to go further on the jobs and specialty training places and some of the terms and conditions that resident doctors have been unhappy about, these strikes are completely unnecessary and wholly irresponsible. They risk harming patients, setting back the progress we're making in the NHS and putting enormous pressure on other NHS staff as we approach winter.
Oh, come on, Secretary of State. What does quotes go further mean? Now, I'm grateful to the Daily Telegraph. They've done very good analysis of the two grievances of these resident doctors, one of which I'm afraid I don't have a lot of time for, and I sense your patience, is, if you had any, is starting to wear thin. They've already enjoyed a 28.9% pay raise over 3 years. They now want an additional 29%, not in one hit, I stress, but this is at a time when we know the country is effectively bankrupt, bust and broken under Labour, so we know that. But the other one is actually more intriguing in a way, and I think is a far, far better plank on which they can campaign. This year, there were more than 30,000 applications for 10,000 jobs for these doctors. So they go through that training, presumably they rack up a bit of debt, and then when they want to start work as doctors, and the Lord only knows we need more, they can't do it. I explored both these elements, that and the pay issue, in the first hour of the show with Dr. Jack Fletcher from the BMA.
The crucial thing that we're asking for and we're looking to fix is jobs for doctors. We've got unemployed doctors up and down this country because we've got a crisis where doctors can't get jobs, they can't get on, they can't become the A&E doctors, the GPs of the future. You and I both know how difficult it is to get a GP appointment in the morning. You can look at any A&E department and there are queues out of the, there are queues down the corridor, patients being trained in the corridor, out the front of the hospital sometimes. And yet we have thousands of doctors who are looking for work who can't find jobs. We did meet with the government. We did put forward proposals. We have been in dialogue, but sadly, these proposals just aren't moving far enough or fast enough to be able to get doctors back into work and also, crucially, get the waiting lists down, get patients treated, and try and get doctors caring for patients again.
Well, the background is apparently this year there were more than 30,000 applicants for 10,000 jobs at this stage. Young men and women spend a lot of their life and a lot of money training to be doctors, and then they can't do it. Why? What is the problem here? Why are we not finding posts for them, Doctor?
So after the first 2 years of doctors, when they're fully qualified, they have to apply to be a specialist. So, for example, at that point, that's the point that you choose to be a GP. That's the point that you choose to be a surgeon or an A&E doctor. And sadly, due to decades of failure in workforce planning, as you rightly allude to, we've got We've got people committing years of their lives to their degree. The taxpayer invests hundreds of thousands of pounds in their education. And yet we now have this group of individuals who just want to get on with their careers. They just want to progress. And yet they can't because there aren't any jobs. We've asked the government with some specific proposals, and with regret, the proposals that have been put forward by the government don't go far enough, don't go fast enough. We're talking about solutions in 2 years' time, whereas actually what we're seeing is consistently waiting lists going up for the last 3 months, and we want to fix that.
Well, that was Dr. Jack Fletcher from the BMA. 8:09 is the time. Let's give Andy Cowper, who's editor of Health Policy Insight, in the conversation. Really grateful to have you on board, Andy, because as a journalist, can you break down into layman's terms why we are told by government after government we need to recruit more doctors? We seem to have thousands of doctors who can't get a job. What's gone wrong, where and why? Morning, Andy.
Good morning, Nick. Happy Friday to you and your listeners. Yeah, so the quotes from Jack Fletcher are sort of substantially correct in your interview earlier, that there is this huge problem with lack of sufficient places for resident doctors, formerly called junior doctors, to move on in their careers. Some of this is about money. So structurally, obviously, if you create more specialist posts for them to move on in onto, they move up the pay scale at that point, and the NHS has been struggling to balance its books for some years now. Some of it is also logistics, because to do those training posts, they need senior doctors, the consultants, available to train them. Now, the NHS has placed huge emphasis on trying to get the backlog down, which is currently hovering at about 7.4 million operations needing to be done. So many trusts have really prioritised pushing their consultants towards doing as much work as possible to try and get the backlog reduced, and reduced their teaching commitments. So you've got sort of a perfect storm of a lack of budget to promote these junior resident doctors into more senior roles, and a lack of people to train them.
Step away, look at it independently. How could this be resolved, Andy?
It's a bit bizarre, isn't it? Because the BMA...
It's nuts. Government after government says we need more doctors, and we seem to have a queue of them, but we can't get into work.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is a real problem. And as you will remember, Nick, there was previously a strike by the resident doctors at the end of June this year on this exact same issue. Although at that time, the BMA's Resident Doctors Committee was led by the people from the Doctors' Vote, which is a sort of Corbynista-style politics entryist grouping of younger doctors. And so obviously at that point, the emphasis was much more on their very long-standing campaign for full pay restoration to 2008 levels. You know, on that occasion, they started that industrial action without public support. Now, the strikes that went on from 2023 and into 2024 under the Conservative government, there remained, even at the very end of those strikes, a majority of public support for the junior doctors. But when they'd had a very large pay rise when Labour took office, after that, I haven't seen any polling which indicates that there is popular support for them. Indeed, the latest polling which I saw, which was from YouGov, taken just kind of a couple of weeks ago, was suggesting that 51% of respondents oppose further action from the resident doctors, and only 38% were supporting it.
51 place 38. I'm going to leave it there. Andy, thank you as ever. Andy Cowper, your editor of Health Policy Insight. You're taking us to 13 minutes after. Andy, I'm leaving that because I want to get a doctor involved in this. Thank you for your input, Andy Cowper. Dr. Benjamin Deldar was an NHS doctor and co-founder of Deep Medical. That's an AI platform aiming to help bring down waiting lists in the NHS, and joins me now. Doctor, two issues to discuss here. The fact that we can't get doctors into work, and the fact that they want nearly 30% pay rise. Which would you want to tackle first? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think, you know, that Andy was right. You've got to first look at it from a backdrop of what's going on in the NHS. So 3 out of 4 hospitals are currently not hitting their cancer targets. 2 out of 5 patients are waiting over 4 hours. It's quite common for patients to be treated every year in corridors. And the over 7.4 million patients are waiting for a hospital appointment or an operation, whilst 12 million appointments go missed and cancelled each year. So really, there is a need for more doctors. And as you rightfully said, a third of doctors only are getting into job posts after their second year as resident doctors. A third of them have no idea what job they're going to get in August, and they're in unstable working conditions. So clearly there's a mismanagement or misalignment in terms of what we're expecting in terms of what's happened in the hospital and what is actually going on. And really there needs to be a more general thought about how do we actually encourage doctors through the training programs.
Doctor, can this be solved solely through cash?
Well, I think it's not just about cash. It's about how do we use or align our management of our resources better. Those doctors end up continuing to work in the hospital anyway. A third of them land substantive service provision jobs. They're still doing the same work in the hospital. A third of them will work as bank and agency staff, where we're currently spending over £5 billion a year on bank and agency staff in the NHS. So it's not about asking people to spend more money. It's about how do we actually spend it correctly.
My other contributor shared some numbers from research suggesting that 51% of people now no longer support the resident doctors, 38% do. What do you think the public mood, where do you think the public mood is on this, Doctor?
I think generally there is a sympathy for doctors and for nurses. You know, myself, I worked in intensive care throughout COVID. You know, we've all believe in the NHS and what it stands for. However, you know, the system is not working. And, you know, people are getting frustrated. If you look at the number of 18 to 25-year-olds who are, you know, arguably the poorest generation amongst all age groups, 40% of them are using private GPs. So people, the NHS isn't meeting people where they need to be.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. Dr. Benjamin Deldar, your former NHS doctor, as you say, in intensive care units. You're co-founder of Deep Medical, the AI platform aiming to help bring down waiting lists in the NHS. So those are the figures, 51% against, 38% for. Where would you come down on that? The fact we can't get them into work is absolutely criminally mad, it would seem. But the fact they want 29%, come on, we'll take your views on that. Also coming up later in the hour, as the former Conservative Cabinet Minister, now Church of England priest and author Jonathan Aitken says, we need to show compassion to Prince Andrew. Would you be ready to do that? It's 8:16, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Plaid Cymru has defeated Reform UK in a fiercely fought Senedd by-election in the former Labour stronghold of Caerphilly. Sir Keir Starmer's to host leaders, including Volodymyr Zelensky, for talks on Ukraine. And the Prime Minister's told LBC that plans for digital ID will bring Britain into the modern age. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most places, cloudier in the northeast, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the western stretch of the M25 clockwise to junction 16 at the M40. It's following an accident where one lane is closed. Anti-clockwise is open but very slow from junction 17 at Maple Cross because of onlookers. Also long delays on the M25 clockwise onto the QE2 bridge, and that was after a brief closure but it's all open now. Delays on the A10 southbound from Cheshunt to just after the M25 at Ballsmore Lane. A lorry has broken down. Also in Enfield, Hartford Road is partially blocked both ways at Turkey Street following an accident, and that's also causing delays. In Oxshott, Warren Lane is closed in both directions following an accident.
LBC.
Agent parent, if your child experiences bedwetting, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is Operation Leak Free Night. Step 1, dress your little ninja in Pampers Ninjamas. Step 2, complete the evening activity chart. Toilet, PJs, lights out. Each task earns a Ninjama star. 3 stars, you've unlocked peak ninja powers, leak protection and unstoppable confidence. Mission accomplished at sunrise. Try Pampers Ninjamas now. Ninjamas.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
private healthcare. Sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls.
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
All about my medical history.
No, no medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6-month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
The £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, 4 McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11 a.m. Not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants subject to availability.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
19 after 8, the numbers are in. No, I'm not talking about that carefully centred by-election. I'm talking about your level of support for another resident doctor strike. 51% against, 38% for. Two main prongs of their concerns. One is there are thousands of trained doctors who can't get jobs, which seems utter lunacy. The other is having enjoyed an all but 29% pay rise over the last 3 years. Yes, 28.9, all but 29%. They want, guess what, another 29% over a number of years. Nancy is in Edinburgh to start us off. Nancy, support or no support? Where are you? Good morning.
I don't know a lot about the doctors. But I just wanted to say it's exactly the same for teachers. My daughter's okay. A teacher.
Break it down for me.
She did her 4 years at uni, at Aberdeen University, graduated, had a year probation in a school, which is mandatory for everybody that wants to go into teaching. At the end of the probation, no jobs.
And I thought we had a shortage of teachers.
Well, seemingly not. No job at all. So she passed her probation with flying colours. All of her peers that graduated at the same time as her did the same. Nobody got a job. Nobody in her group of friends. So we're probably talking 6 or 7 people that she was close with after she left uni. And the thing with teachers is that you're not allowed to apply outside of your county.
So seriously?
Yeah, seriously. So she didn't get a job at her school. There were no jobs in Fife, which is the county that she was in at the time. Not allowed to apply, for example, to West Lothian or Glasgow or something like that. Her father lived in Glasgow. She could have lived with him, but not allowed to apply outside of the county.
I would have thought that was a restrictive practice that if you're, I don't know, you're trained in Kent, you can't try and get a job in Sussex. That's ridiculous.
No, you absolutely. I don't know if you see, I'm in Scotland.
Oh, of course.
Maybe it could be different in England, but I wouldn't have thought so.
Yeah.
But so she's now in Australia. She left. Her best mate went to Australia as well. And I know the other 6 or 7 certainly left. They've gone abroad.
Whereabouts in Oz is she?
She's in Melbourne now, and she's got a great job. She's got a teaching job. But you think...
Yeah, but you don't see your daughter.
No, exactly.
That's the most important part of our conversation. Yeah. You can't go around for Sunday lunch this weekend.
No, exactly. But, you know, you think, is there nobody looking, like a helicopter kind of vision, thinking, why do we keep running this degree when there are no jobs?
Isn't it terrible? Hey, can I ask you, how often do you get down to see her?
We went last year to see her, which was lovely, actually. But, I mean, you're not going to go every year because obviously it's
so expensive.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's double the price of a normal holiday. Okay. But, it's not on the doctors, but I don't think so, actually.
Oh, no. Has she met an Australian partner then or something like that?
She's actually married, but to a Scottish man. They went together, you know.
Because that's what it went on for me when I went to Australia. An Australian girl. And we know what happened next. Oh, well, listen, give her my... That's such a fascinating story. I really appreciate your input. Give her and your son-in-law my best wishes. That is tough for you as a mum, but if she's well and she's doing well in her career, That's important, isn't it? Nancy, thank you for that. 8:23, Baz, you'll be the next caller, but I wonder if I can ask you to hold, because we have a senior member of the police force to talk about a report that's come out. The police service has made notable progress in its commitment to tackling child sexual exploitation and group-related offending, but more needs to be done to provide what's called a comprehensive, coordinated response that victims need and deserve, so say this police inspectorate. Well, let's bring into the conversation Michelle Skier, who is His Majesty's Inspector of Constabulary and a former Chief Constable. And you better put me right here. Do I address you as Chief Constable or Inspector? Which is the correct title? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. No, it's HMI. Thank you.
You're Inspector. Thank okay, you Inspector, what needs to be done then? So you are making, sorry, police forces and services are making progress. What needs to happen next? Morning to you.
Morning. Yes, so this inspection was a follow-up inspection from 2023, and we did see, as you rightly said, seen some notable progress, especially in relation to how police forces are investigating, so you're more likely to have specialist resources in this really critical area of child exploitation, which is horrendous crimes. There is a greater focus on missing children, especially those that are repeated missing, so there's a greater awareness that those children may be subject to exploitation. But we also saw that actually there needs to be renewed effort, especially in terms of data, so having that good quality data so you can understand the true nature of the scale of the issue, both at a local and a national level. And still there were some organisations that hadn't adopted the single definition of that organised network for child, you know, group-based child sexual exploitation, which came out of the ICSA inquiry in 2022. So, yes, progress, but definitely more to do.
What can you tell me about Operation Make Safe, Inspector?
Operation Make Safe was a good preventative activity where policing and partners have come together. So, basic raising awareness with like taxi firms, hotels, fast food outlets, so they can actually potentially spot exploitation.
But what are they meant to look out for, Inspector? What are the signs that you make them aware,
It's signs of, you know, just strange behaviour. So maybe an adult male with a young girl going into a hotel at midnight, you know, just looking out for those behaviours and having that raised awareness, which is so important, and more importantly, that they know what to do with it, so that actually they can go into the local authorities, whether it's policing, but raising their concerns. And that actually has had some success, but it needs to be more consistently applied right across the country.
Inspector, the number of incidents, cases of child exploitation, is it increasing, decreasing, or staying roughly the same?
There is definitely, in terms of the crime figures that have just come out this week, and it's showing that sexual offences overall are going up, improving in terms of recording. And we have found through our other inspections that policing are recording crimes overall better. But that's why these inspection reports are so important, because it's about making sure you can keep a focus.
What is the percentage increase, Inspector, that was recorded?
Well, it was right across, it wasn't just for this particular strand, it was right across sexual offences. I think it was about a 9% increase in sexual offences, but it was right across the piece, which had just come out in the crime stats this week.
Given that, then, there's been a lot of attention nationally to the so-called grooming gang inquiry. How important is it that we actually get that into gear, in your view, Inspector?
I think it's imperative. It's an, you know, it's an important opportunity to understand what has gone wrong in the past and identify what needs to change going forward, and making sure that victims and survivors are at the heart of that. They need the support and the justice they deserve.
But we're waking up to headlines this morning that it might be off until next year. How disappointed would that make you?
It is disappointing, because, and it is very complex, and bringing a qualified chair into the inquiry, but it is so important that that inquiry gets started. And that's why, as an independent inspector, we will be renewing our focus in terms of our inspections and following up on our recommendations to try and effect change in this really critical area.
Inspector, do you think the government is grasping this strongly enough?
I think they are certainly trying. They are trying to get the public inquiry off the ground. I think it has been extremely disappointing this week that they haven't been able to secure a chair for the panel. But it's absolutely imperative. It's a great opportunity to have that public inquiry. And we welcomed news of that inquiry back in June from the inspectorate, because we see it as vital to, you know, support the work right across to for this horrendous crime of child sex exploitation has lifelong impacts on victims, not only victims and survivors, but their families. So we need to affect change in this area.
And lastly, I note you're critical of the Home Office's failure to use definition of a grooming gang. Can you just expand lastly a little bit on that for my listeners, Inspector?
It's the definition that came out of the ICSA inquiry in 2022, and it's really important that we, all organisations, are working on one definition in terms of that organised network for group-based child sexual exploitation. The reason why it's so important, because actually you need to have good quality data so you can actually understand the scale and nature of the problem to get the right prevention in place and then proactively help safeguard those victims and tackle offenders.
You support Professor Alexis Jay's definition from 2022. A gang is an organised network comprised of two or more people. That's what's not being implemented as you see it.
That's what's not being implemented right across the board. What we've seen is policing have adopted it, which we're really pleased to see, and other organisations linked to policing, but it needs to be right across the board so we can get lasting, effective change in this area.
Grateful for your time. Thank you for you, and of course the work your colleagues have done in preparing that report. Michelle Skier, His Majesty's Inspector of Constabulary. Baz, if you can, I hope you can hold the other side, because I do want to hear, and I think you've got family involved in medicine, so I absolutely want to hear what you make of what would appear to be yet another resident doctor strike. We're going to do it the other side of the news, when we're also going to be hearing, of course, from the former Conservative cabinet minister. It's fair to say disgraced and got an 18-month jail term for perjury, but he's saying it's time to show some kind of mercy to Prince Andrew. You ready for that? 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrar on LBC. News time, Thomas Watts.
Plaid Cymru have won the Senedd by-election in Caerphilly, ending Labour's 100-year hold on the area. The new MS, Lindsay Whittle, won 47% of the vote, ahead of Reform UK on 36%. Leaders, including Volodymyr Zelensky, will gather in London later to discuss the war in Ukraine. The Prime Minister will call for Kyiv to be given more long-range weapons to step up the pressure on Russia. A watchdog has warned there are still significant challenges in how police tackle grooming gangs. Separately, sources have warned it could take months to find a new chair for the grooming gangs inquiry. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most, cloudy with heavier rain in the northeast, a high of 13 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
With the news that one of the people we sent back to France who came on a small boat has returned, we ask whether anything can solve the small boat's crisis.
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Nobody asks to have a lifetime of memories slowly erased. Nobody asks to have a loved one not recognize them. Nobody asks to feel lonely and confused. But today, you could change this. By leaving a gift in your will to Alzheimer's Society, you'll help fund life-changing support, vital campaigning, and groundbreaking research to tackle Britain's biggest killer. Discover the impact your gift can make. Search Alzheimer's Society Wills.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Imagine the very focal lens of the future, personalised to you, engineered with artificial intelligence and powered by your visual behaviour. Experience instantly sharp vision in motion with Varilux XR Pro lenses from Essilor. Find your local optician at Essilor.com and ask for Varilux XR Pro.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT, protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
8:32, back to that doctor's strike in a moment, but here's a question that you probably didn't think I'd be asking. Is it time to show some form of compassion, some form of mercy to Prince Andrew? My eye was drawn to a letter in one of the newspapers, The Times, by Jonathan Aiken, Reverend Jonathan Aiken, my apologies, who was a Church of England priest. He, of course, was a prominent Conservative MP, indeed he was a cabinet minister. but he was jailed back in 1999 for 18 months for perjury. He's now refound and reformed his life, and he writes the following. I'm going to read it all, if you'll allow me. Sir, writes the Reverend Jonathan Aiken, sir, could it be time to start treating Prince Andrew with a touch of mercy? Whatever his mistakes, he must now be in the depths of brokenness and torment. Anyone who has been through smaller or similar experiences of vilification knows the precious value of those who extend a word or two of kindness. So even in the eye of the storm, let Prince Andrew hear a few still, small voices of human compassion. Reverend Jonathan Aiken joins me now. Good to have you on, sir. How should those...
Hello, sir.
How should those few still, small voices of human compassion display themselves in your view? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, it's an interesting question, and you may be surprised by my answer. As far as I can tell, and of course I've got a very limited sample, there's a much bigger section of the community out there who think perhaps it is time to give Prince Andrew something of a break in terms of just compassion, because he's, as I said in the letter, in the depths of brokenness and torment. He's obviously made some very serious mistakes, and of judgment, and for all we know, of behavior, although he himself has denied any wrongdoing. But I think it's just time for a few voices, what I call the few still small voices of human compassion, to make themselves heard, because they're out there all right. They're not just as noisy as our mighty media. So I stand by what I wrote.
The mighty media, I take you back, and I know you're robust enough, you won't mind me reminding you of some headlines. Daily Mail, liar Aitken jailed for 18 months. The Guardian, he lied and lied and lied. What did that do for your inner being when you were subjected to that level of scrutiny, Reverend?
Well, it made me feel very remorseful and very ashamed. And one thing I did do, which was to admit it all. And say sorry as quickly as possible. I pleaded guilty. I paid the price of a jail sentence, all of which was painful. I'm not suggesting that Prince Andrew should do any of that.
No.
Because it's very different circumstances. But nevertheless, I think it's easier if you fess up. It's easier if you say, I was wrong. And it's easier for your own soul. It may be easier in the eyes of the public. You won't be quickly forgiven by some people, never forgiven by others. But at least there are, I think, there's a lot of generosity and kindness in the British people, and that's not very much apparent at the moment.
The circumstances are, of course, somewhat different, Reverend, in that... in that, well, you're not in line to the throne from memory. In Prince Andrew's case, we have someone who would, I think it's fair to say, at the Duchess of Kent's funeral, decided to put himself front and forward, attempted to speak with the King, attempted to speak with his nephew, and is living, it would appear, although we don't know for certain, rent-free in a 30-room mansion. There's no suggestion of any sign of guilt or sense of consequence of what he's done, Reverend.
Well, I think you do put your finger on a great weakness in the presentation, at least, of Prince Andrew's position. We don't actually know what he is feeling in his heart and soul, but he's paid a heavy price for his pretty massive mistakes, and I'm not sure what else our mighty media want him to do. It would be boiled in oil, or so goodness knows. I just think the vilification of Andrew has gone a bit too far, even though much of it is justified. So I think what might we call the voices of mercy and compassion need to be heard too, and I think they're around, even though I don't seem to be just about everyone who's come out publicly so far.
Finally, given the fact that you found your faith, you're a Church of England priest, and I read how important your faith is to you, were you to meet Prince Andrew, what would you say to him?
Well, I would first and foremost say, I'm sorry you're going through such an awful time. I might then...
He did form a close friendship with a convicted paedophile, Reverend.
Yes, he did. That was a terrible mistake, clearly, to have done that. He must be regretting the day he ever met that man. So I'm not excusing him in any way. I'm just saying we all make mistakes at various levels. I think what might we call the compassionate tendency needs to have their voices heard, as well as the boil him in oil tendency.
Enjoyed our time together. Be well. Thank you. Reverend Jonathan Aitken, a Church of England priest and author now, and prison chaplain who, of course, was a Conservative cabinet minister but did 18 months after being convicted of perjury, having both pleaded guilty at that point back in 1999. Ready to show any sympathy to Prince Andrew? Baz is in Slough. Baz, let's talk doctors. How many of you... You've got some family in the medical profession, I've got a note. Is that right? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I hope you're well.
I'm all right, Governor.
I've got five cousins who are all brothers. Three of them are GPs, and two are still studying to become GPs.
God bless your family, or may your whatever God you tomb you pray bless your family. That's fantastic.
So they basically lived and qualified, worked in West London. After working a couple of years there, all of them moved to Lancashire, start working there. But they just got fed up with the lifestyle of the working hours and the pay, which was not enough as a GP. Apparently, I've been told they're only allowed to work 4 days a week.
Who only allows that? Is that the BMA? Is that their surgeons? Yeah, is that the hospital? Break that down for me a bit, Baz.
Apparently the NHS only allows GPs to work 4 days a week. The amount of pressure and tense in the work, apparently. That's what they told me when I spoke to them last. And in them 4 days, apparently, they've got to refer, they've got to chase up the blood test. Mm. Literally, they've got to do everything themselves. So even sometimes when they come home, they're still working until about 8, 9 o'clock at night.
Baz, would they all be supportive of yet more industrial action? Do some of them say enough already? What do they tell you?
Well, they just said it's enough. They couldn't do it anymore. They were burning themselves out, not spending enough time with the family and the kids, and they wanted to change.
Are they glad they went into the profession?
They are. Now they are.
When you say just... Sorry, break that down.
Because they moved to Canada now.
Mm.
Three of the brothers have moved to Canada.
Oh, they've moved to Canada. Oh, right.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Lord.
I should have mentioned that.
Well, you should have mentioned that, because I'm saying thank you for your great family, and they've all gone off to Canada. Well, I mean, I wish them nothing but good health, but I mean, I'm not so compassionate now, because they've gone.
No, but they got it. They are, because obviously all the families are here, but they had to move for a better lifestyle and for the family. So So they're just working now. All the test results are chased out by the secretaries. The bloods are given. They just literally seeing patients, and that's they're doing.
I see. Safe driving, Baz. Thanks for being on the line. Best wishes to all of them, but extra best wishes to the ones who stayed in the UK. It's 8:40. Let's pick up on the idea that we should show some compassion, some mercy towards Prince Andrew. Jim Bailey, Jonathan Aitken cannot be serious. Compassion for a man who's shown zero remorse, empathy or honesty? Well, let's say he denies all allegations. I'm happy to read on. Where was his compassion when he was asking for people to troll and dig up dirt on the unfortunate young woman who ultimately took her own life? It is unbelievable. Andy says fairly, how do you give forgiveness to someone who hasn't admitted doing anything wrong? John points out, you've just said he lied about Jonathan Aitken. Do you want to say the same about Prince Andrew? He lied. John, I should have thought of that. Well done. Who's been hanging on the longest? Paul's in Watford. Ready to show some compassion, some mercy to Prince Andrew? Good morning.
Not an ounce.
Okay, so tell me why.
Unbelievable. Jonathan Aitken, fair dues, comes on. As you said, he's had his road to Damascus moment.
He has.
He was called the perjury. When he was actually in prison the first time, he actually acted as a teacher to the prisoners
in
there.
He taught people to read and write. Yep, he did.
Well done. Well remembered, right?
Yep.
And since then, he's become a reverend, right?
Yep.
So you can see there's a significant change. And he's asked for forgiveness, right?
Yep. Is it the remorse? Because, again, we don't know that Prince Andrew has committed any crime. We do know he's lied. There's no doubt about that in media interviews. But we don't know. Is it the fact that he seems to just so show such self-entitlement still?
He is hidden behind smoke and mirrors since this whole story started gathering, right, for years.
Mm.
And, you know, the car crash interview. I mean, if you must have communication PR experts around you.
Oh, my God, they're surrounded by them, Paul.
How was that interview even allowed to be broadcast?
Afterwards, he told his mother, the late Queen, he thought it had gone rather well. Did you know that?
No, I did know that.
He's a guy I'd like reviewing the newspapers in the morning. That'd be interesting. Paul, thank you. Very good points you make. Is it the lack of remorse that we see from Andrew that makes it so different from, and he won't mind me saying this, the disgraced former Conservative cabinet minister turned priest, Jonathan Aitken. I've known Reverend Aitken for years. Thanks, Paul. Don in Farnham. compassion, mercy. You ready for that? Morning.
Well, good morning to you, Mr. Farrell. It's lovely to talk to you.
Good to have you on,
sir. At my late age in life, you're a genuine hero, along with Ian Dale, in terms of your balanced and respectful approach to people.
That's me and Ian. Yes, a balance, undoubtedly.
Prince Andrew, I mean, a lot has been said, you know, the things that have been said up to now are absolutely right. I mean, the guy historically has been an oaf and a buffoon, and that's not a crime, I appreciate that.
But do you remember, Don, I sense you're of a similar opinion. Do you remember when he came back from the Falklands? He was a hero. Can you remember him standing on the deck of a ship with a rose clenched in his teeth, and he'd been a helicopter pilot against the Argies in the Falklands? He was a hero.
No, absolutely right, and he should be given full credit, and he was given full credit for that at the time. But 40-something years on, I think he's demonstrated throughout his, in inverted commas, career with the royal family, this same sort of oafishness, buffoonery, entitlement, and total and utter lack of self-awareness, particularly, and there's been a lot reported about his time as some kind of business ambassador for the British government, and the kind of things he said and did, the way he put his foot in kind of sensitive negotiations, I think, particularly with the Saudis. And it goes on and on and on, up until the point where I think when you get to his interview with Emily Maitlis, I literally was kind of cringing on the chair, listening to the chap, thinking, this just does not seem right. I mean, you couldn't have even written the script.
Do you know what came through there? Is a couple of things you just said, Don. Extraordinary self-entitlement and arrogance. It shone through him in that interview.
So much so, and yet so. But if he came to the point where I could genuinely believe that there was some sense of self-realization, some kind of humility shown, but I think much more importantly, atonement. One of the best examples of atonement was the Profumo affair, and Profumo took himself off, did some fantastic work for charity, pretty much unreported, but ended up devoting his life to some good works.
Is there a parallel with Jonathan Aitken there, in that he taught prisoners to read and write, he's gone off and been a priest and a prison chaplain?
I think so, because maybe, I'm guessing, maybe Mr. Aitken was temporarily beset by the same level of lack of self-awareness, being a senior politician. And then when he came down to earth, he was imprisoned, then he came to his senses and realised what he'd done, and I think he has had a kind of a genuine conversion ever since.
Final question then, in your book, No Compassion or mercy to Andrew until we see some kind of degree of remorse.
Absolutely right, because, you know, how can I do that where he might not have broken any laws, but he's behaved in such a disgraceful manner for somebody in perhaps one of the most prominent positions in the country. So.
Donna, we'll leave it there. Thank you for your very kind words about the show. You have yourself a great weekend. We'll continue this conversation. So far, no compassion whatsoever for Prince Andrew, despite the plea from the Church of England priest Jonathan Aitken. We'll come back to that. But we need to go back to that Welsh political earthquake.
I give public notice that Lindsay Whittle is duly elected as the Member of the Senate for Caerphilly constituency.
Yes, well played, Plaid, Cymru, they are the victors. We'll hear from Reform UK after this. It's 8:46, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Plaid Cymru have won a battle with Reform UK to win the Senedd by-election in Caerphilly. A meeting of the so-called Coalition of the Willing on Ukraine will be held in London later. And a report says there are still significant challenges in how police tackle child sexual exploitation and grooming gangs. LBC weather, scattered showers with sunny spells for most, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 clockwise from before junction 15 at the M4 to 16 at the M40. It was after an accident, but in the last few moments, all the lanes have just reopened. Very busy still on the A10 southbound from Cheshunt to Ballsmoor Lane. That's the junction just after the M25. It's because a lorry has broken down. In Lewisham, there are queues on Station Road going westbound following an accident. On the underground, the Piccadilly line remains suspended between Uxbridge and Rayners Lane. There are minor delays as well on the central line. On the train, Southwestern Railway services are now running at Aldershot, but with delays of about half an hour, and that's for services down to Oldham.
This is LBC.
Introducing the redesigned Dell PC with the Intel Core Ultra Processor. It helps you handle a lot, even when your holiday to-do lists get to be a lot. Like organising your holiday shopping and responding to holiday requests and customer questions and customers requesting custom things, plus planning the perfect holiday dinner for vegans, vegetarians, pescatarians and Uncle Mike's carnivore diet. Whoa. Luckily, the Dell PC helps you handle a lot. And with impressive battery life, you can do it all faster to get it all done. That's the power of a Dell PC with Intel inside. Get yours at dell.co.uk/holiday.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
The £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, four McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11 a.m. Not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants subject to availability.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
ITV presents...
Oh, my God.
Gas!
There is a chemical weapon in the cab.
We are dealing with a serial killer.
The devices are designed to kill, but first he wants to suffocate them. I'm Spanny.
I can't watch you. Give everything until you've got nothing left.
I take risks. That's my job.
Help! Lana!
Hold your breath. Trigger Point returns October 26 on ITV1 and ITVX.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out. Show support. Report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
Let's come back to that political earthquake in Wales. And I say again, well played, Plaid. A tremendous victory. But let's look at the performance of Reform UK. Let's give you a bit of history. In 2021 in the constituency, the candidate got 2% of the vote and 495 votes. That changed, I was going to say last night, actually more like this morning, that changed to 12,113 votes and I think 36% share. Let's bring into the conversation Chairman of Reform UK and a former MEP, Dr. David Bull, who joins me now. Good to have you on, with your medical hat on. Close but no cigar. With your medical hat on, you'll be pleased with that, Doctor.
As a
politician, you failed again. David Bull, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Don't be ridiculous. Of course, we're disappointed by that result. But you're right. Look, if you look back 4 years ago, we got 1.7%. To get 36% is amazing, actually. An extraordinary journey. I actually think that's pretty unprecedented in modern British politics. I think just in terms of the other results. Look at Labour. This is a tribally and traditional Labour part of the world. Now, Labour has ruled this part of the world for about 100 years. They got They got 11%. That is derisory. The Tories wiped out down to 2%. They might as well pick up the ball and go home. Now, what we are seeing is actually, I think what the public is saying is we are sick and tired of the way the country is being run, Wales is being run, and what we want is to see a change. And that is what we saw last night. It is a two-party race between Plaid and between us as well. They are abandoning Labour. They're abandoning the Tories. I was in Liverpool the other day, 2 days ago, and again, a very traditional Labour seat. Now, Labour was polling at 84%, and that was in 2017. They've dropped by half since Keir Starmer took over. They've dropped 20%. So the reason I tell you that story is I'm seeing this on my chairman's tour around the country. I've seen 5,000 people over the last 4 months. Traditional Labour voters have said, I have had enough. That party does not represent me, and we're looking for something different.
What is it? There, look, something different could mean everything to it, everything to every person. What in reality are you hearing, Doctor?
Well, what I'm hearing on the ground is they want British people to be put first. I think pretty much underlying all of this is a sense of unfairness, particularly in Wales. And what the people said on the doorstep, and I was there in Caerphilly, I was there with our amazing candidate, knocking on doors. The number one issue for people was immigration. It was also about employment, the cost of living. 20% of young people in Wales are not in education, employment or training. The health outcomes, and obviously as a medic, are appalling in Wales. And what people are saying is, hang on a minute, nothing works in this country in Wales. We want something different. We want to be put first. I think there's one other thing I just want to say about Wales. It's a by-election. You know more than anyone that people vote differently in by-elections to a general election. And if you look at the latest MRP poll, which was carried out, what, two weeks ago or thereabouts, that actually we would end up with a walloping majority. We'd have something like 445 Westminster seats and a majority of something like 258. So there is something very seismic going on in the country.
Just finishing on Wales, Doctor, how much of it was an issue of your party's former leader there, Nathan Gill, pleaded guilty to 8 counts of bribery in order to make positive statements for Russia? Well, did that cost you actual ultimate victory?
Well, it certainly had an impact. Obviously, I know Nathan
Did it cost
Gill.
You victory?
I mean, I don't know, is the honest
What do you
answer.
Think? David.
Well, I mean, it's obviously had an impact, hasn't it? I mean, Nathan Gill and I were in the European Parliament together. He's pleaded guilty to those charges. He should face the full force of the law. He has not been involved with the party since 2021. I took over as chairman 4 months ago. And one of the things, Nick, that I have been very keen to do is to vet our candidates properly. I have actually increased the vetting team. I have to find, as an insurgent party with 5 members of Parliament, I've got to find 5,000 candidates to fight locally, mayoral elections, parliamentary elections. We've got to get this right. We have to
How
get
is
the
your
right
vetting?
I've
challenged your colleague Nigel Farage more times than I can remember about councillors and candidates and potential MPs who've been racists and all sorts of problems, members of the Ku Klux Klan. What is the vetting procedure you've put in place, David?
So it's deep dive vetting, and we look at a number of platforms. One of the issues that we've had in the past, and I'll be frank and honest about it, is people haven't disclosed their social media profiles. And that is one thing that I'm really keen to get to the bottom of. Because on paper, people can look good, they can give you CVs, they can do a good interview, but actually they've written something abhorrent. The minute we find that stuff, they're out. Zero tolerance.
Okay. Lastly, you've been on a, I think you said 5,000 people tour around the, and I assume that's the whole of the United Kingdom because you've mentioned Wales and you mentioned Liverpool. Yes. So yeah. Okay. The elections in a few months' time in much of England, in Wales, in Scotland. What does success look like for Reform UK as the chairman?
Well, I mean, obviously what I want to see.
Come on, we want numbers. Come on, David.
You want numbers. I mean, look, I'm certainly can't give you those. But what I would say is that we're making slow and steady progress. That's a very big political answer, isn't it? It's a politician's answer. But look, the point is that we've got Welsh and Scottish elections next year. We've got the mayoral elections. I need to find 10 mayors. I've got to find all these candidates. I've got to get the parliamentary system up and running. We're going to open all of that. Nick, this is a massive job. We have 5 members of parliament, 2 elected mayors. By the way, since Labour Party did their conference, we've actually gained 12,000 new members to Reform UK. 262,000 members. We've overtaken the Tories. I'm pretty sure, actually, we've overtaken Labour because they're so frightened they've taken their ticker down.
Lastly, can you win the Welsh Senate, looking at last night?
Yes, I think we can.
Always enjoy speaking to you. Dr. David Bull, thank you. You're chairman of Reform UK and, of course, worth reminding everybody, a former MEP yourself. Coming up 3 minutes before... Yeah, 3 minutes before nine is the time. Let me get into some... I haven't done anything like enough emails, texts, and everything else comes in on the couple of subjects we're looking at this hour. The first one being, do remember to sign them, by the way. First one being the situation with the resident doctors in that they might be now, well, I think it almost certainly will be striking for more days in November, these two key issues. And that's exactly what's picked up by Piers in Kent. I'm glad you broke down those two issues. Clearly on the side of money, 29% is ludicrous. Do they not know what everyone else in the private sector is having to cope with? But the idea we can't get doctors in place does seem wrong. Be sure to mention it next time you get Wes Streeting on. I thought you said he was one of the better ones, Nick. I think he is probably one of the better ones, and I have made a mental note that there is something rather strange going on, whether it's this helicopter view or it's called, I don't know. Also talking about Prince Andrew and the suggestion by the Reverend Jonathan Aitken to remind you, and some of you weren't even born Many of you weren't even born, but in 1999, as a former cabinet minister for the Conservatives, he got 18 months for perjury. With some pretty damning headlines as he went down. Brian Parker in Burnley on the subject of Andrew, you can only be forgiven for a crime if you show genuine remorse. This also applies to a prison sentence when applying for release. I agree. Just need to say something there. Prince Andrew has not been convicted of any crime, and of course he denies all the allegations, but I get the thrust of what you're saying. Lydia in Sheffield, I think, was a bit appalled. Can you ask the guest, has he read any of Virginia Giuffre's book? She should be mentioned in this awful conversation. She is, of course, the woman who claimed that she was sexually abused on a number of occasions by Prince Andrew. I better say again, claims he has always denied. This comes in on the same subject from... Oh, you've forgotten to sign that. This Jonathan hasn't. John, I'm sorry, in London. If Prince Andrew had shown some remorse, then yes, we should show him kindness to him, but it simply is not evident. Same subject, same theme, actually. John Reynolds. Andrew... Oh, you call him Andrew Windsor. Andrew Windsor has not confessed or apologised to his victims. And lastly, Oana says, kind words for someone involved in that level of crime. Well, I don't know about level of crime, but let's say people involved with criminals, let's put it like that. Absolutely not, says Oana. He took advantage of the privilege he was born. He does awful things. And here's that word again. He shows no remorse. Good. I managed to do some of the many that have come in on that. All right, coming up after the news. The music means we must move on. Remember the promise from Housing Secretary Steve Reid at the party conference to build, baby, build. Well, he spoke to me about the particular situation, how critical it is, in London.
It's absolutely shocking, the failure to get house building going. It's not just in London, it's across the whole country.
And as reports of under-25s living with OCD has tripled in just 10 years, we'll be asking why. Sophie Ashcroft is one of those.
And if you have that bad thought, it's like, I need to do that again, I need to do that again. I check excessively before I go to bed.
Those stories and more will follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, Plaid Cymru have taken the Senedd seat of Caerphilly, an area dominated by Labour for 100 years. The new MS, Lindsay Whittle, won 47% of the vote ahead of Reform UK on 36% and Labour on just 11%. There was a record turnout of more than 50%. The Plaid leader, Rhun ap Iorwerth, has told LBC it's a momentous result.
There is a significant amount of anti-Labour sentiment out there. I've never felt anything quite like it on the doorstep. There was a very strong anti-reform sentiment, and I was very pleased that Caerphilly said no to that kind of politics. But everywhere you went, people were telling you they were voting Plaid for the first time, not begrudgingly, but because they believed in what we had to offer.
Sir Keir Starmer will make the case for using frozen Russian assets to fund Ukraine's defences at a meeting in London later. Leaders from the so-called Coalition of the Willing are due to hold talks. They will also discuss Kiev's supply of long-range weapons. The Paymaster General, Nick Thomas Simmons, has told Nick the central objective is stepping up pressure on Vladimir Putin.
It's about a number of dimensions of support for Ukraine, whether that is in terms of military hardware, whether that is in terms of financial support as well, but also showing this unity in the coalition of the willing to Putin is massively important as well.
The Prime Minister's told LBC that plans for digital ID will bring the UK into the modern age. Sir Keir Starmer's been setting out a wider vision for the system in an exclusive article on the LBC app. Critics have raised concerns about privacy, data security and the cost of the rollout by 2029. Two men are due to appear in court charged over a fire at a mosque in East Sussex. Ricky Ryder and Jack Slowey, who are 38 and 34, are accused of arson with intent to endanger life. The building in Peacehaven was damaged earlier this month. Voters in Ireland are going to the polls to choose their next president. The winner will serve for the next 7 years, replacing Michael D. Higgins. And retailers saw sales rise for a fourth consecutive month in September. Analysts say the 0.6% increase in volumes was driven by the new iPhone and demand for jewellery. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 95.89. That's up 10 points. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most places. Cloudy with heavier rain in the northeast. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Quaker is an official sponsor of Team GB, and rightly so. After all, the rowing team's motto is Oats Move Boats. But why stop there? Team GB, if you're listening, try these on for size. Quaker sachets move Bob sleighs. Ugly bowl, forward roll. One for the gymnasts. The world's your stage when you eat some beige. Maybe just stick to Oats Move Boats. Quaker. Deliciously real, deliciously ugly. Sponsor of Team GB.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine, Friday the 24th of October. Coming up in this hour, quotas for affordable housing in London to be cut. As the government tried to build, baby build, in the words of the Housing Secretary, by the way, at the Labour Party conference in Liverpool a few weeks ago. But what actually constitutes affordable housing? And in all honesty, if you're trying to buy in London, my goodness me, you probably have to rob a bank. I don't mean that literally. But you have to go somewhere to try and get the cash or the deposit. In other troubling news, the number of 16 to 24-year-olds reporting symptoms of OCD, which is obsessive-compulsive disorder, has more than trebled, or tripled, whichever word you prefer, in a decade. Why? Lee Wallbank is from the charity OCD Action. She says this must be taken seriously.
OCD needs to be seen as a serious mental health condition, and policymakers and the government need to invest in OCD and OCD services.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Do you have OCD? Or have you had OCD? I know we're going to be talking about housing, but I just want to get into this for a moment. Because I don't normally trouble you about issues, because I'm intensely boring. I'd rather hear your stories. But I did briefly have OCD. Subsequently, I think it was linked to the fact that my father had been diagnosed with cancer. And I think that possibly triggered it all or whatever. I really can't remember. But it was really bad. So I'll tell you how it showed itself with me later in the show, and I'll tell you how I dealt with it. There was no counselling involved. But that's later. But if you have OCD, and this is, I think these are Gen Zers, aren't they? 16 through 24-year-olds. That's tripled in 10 years. These poor young folk, because to me they are young, 16 to 24, they need some help. Anyway, that's to come. Let's get into this housing story. What constitutes affordable housing, do you suppose? Well, I'll tell you in a minute. First, I need to tell you that ministers have confirmed plans that were actually floated on this show, I think it was earlier this month. Yes, it was. That they would reduce what are called affordable housing quotas for developers in London as they attempt to reverse the collapse in house building in the city. Steve Reid, the Housing Secretary, I'll play you a bit from him in a moment, said yesterday developers would qualify for fast-track planning status if their projects included 20% affordable housing, down from the current target of 35%. Now, what constitutes affordable housing is, broadly speaking, a 20% reduction in the purchase price or the rent, though. 20% cut, discount, whatever you want to call it. More on that in a moment. But let's go back to Steve Reid, the Housing Secretary, quite new in post, by the way. He was the Environment Secretary, speaking with me earlier this month about the collapse and conceding in London it had been a failure.
It's absolutely shocking. The failure to get house building going. It's not just in London, it's across the whole country. And it's because of what the previous government... They scrapped house building targets, so local authorities were no longer expected to build homes. They introduced new regulation that added years of delay to getting the schemes going. And if you do that, you end up with a situation where you just get 19 sales in London in 1 month. The package of reforms I'm announcing today will deal with part of that, but I'm going to come back on your show in a few weeks' time with the Mayor of London and announce an acceleration package specifically looking at what has gone wrong in London so that we can correct that and get house building going here again.
But shouldn't the Mayor have been doing more before this? This has been going on for months now. London has fallen off a cliff as regards house
sales. It
wasn't
the Mayor that introduced those new regulatory burdens. It was a previous Conservative government. It wasn't the Mayor that scrapped house building targets. It was the previous Conservative
government. But he's allowed to maintain targets in London. He often talks about house building as a priority, and it's not been, has it?
constituency.
If you look at what the boroughs are doing, Bromley Council, which is controlled by the Conservatives, 95% behind their new house building target. Compare that with Newham, a Labour-run borough, which is ahead of their target. So I can see who the builders are, I can see who the blockers are, but I want the Mayor of London to have more power to make Conservative-run boroughs build the homes that people there need.
And what had put that into such stark relief was that the week before I was speaking with the Housing Secretary, the London Evening Standard had said that figures, official figures, showed that just 19 newly built private homes had changed hands, i.e. completed and the new owners go in. 19 for the whole of May. In April, it had been 23. And to give you context, it used to be counted in the hundreds, i.e. 350, 360. 19, we don't have actually, let's chase June's figure, we should do that. Maybe not for today, but certainly try and get into that. Sorry, I was waving at a colleague, then if you thought I'd gone raving mad. So that's 19 in May, 23 in April, and they used to count them in the 100, the low hundreds, 300 odd. Vicky Spratt is housing correspondent of the I newspaper. She has an analysis piece in with the headline. Vicky won't have written the headline, but hopefully it sums up the story. Reducing homes target could make Labour's ambitions impossible. Vicky Spratt joins me now. Why so, Vicky? Morning.
For once, I actually do agree with that headline, Nick, although you're quite right.
I know what the subs used to do it to me every time. And of course, whenever you see the person, they remember the headline and they say, why did you say that? Honestly, Minister, I didn't say that. But anyway, on you go, Vicky.
It wasn't me. Although on this occasion, that's pretty close to what I suggested. Look, I think Steve Reid has come into the job and very quickly tried to make his mark. And credit where credit's due. I think the Housing Secretary has stuck his head up above the parapet on some very, very contentious issues, which is why some Labour MPs are not happy about what has been announced. But let's just break it down, right? Because what's going on in London is not as simple as it was just made out to be in the clip that you played.
Right.
It is true. We are not building enough in London. But there is another reason that is not just down to builders or regulation, and that is housing is really expensive. It's really difficult to get a mortgage for most people and be able to buy a home at the value that you are now required to pay. I know this myself. I earn good money. I really want to move out of my one-bedroom flat into a two- or a three-bedroom flat or house. Yep. I'm going to have to borrow so much money, it makes me feel sick. There are so many people in that situation. And when we're talking about regulation, by the way, before we just get into what's announced, we're talking about building safety regulation, Nick, that was introduced after the Grenfell tragedy. Now, the building safety regulator does have a backlog. That is true. That's also partly why new homes aren't coming onto the market. But that's because of resourcing at the building safety regulator, not because the regulations are bad. And the Conservatives' record on housing is incredibly mixed. But one of the things I think they did that was very good is sort out the post-Grenfell mess and say, no, we're not going to build unsafe homes anymore. So to oversimplify that and say, oh, regulation's the reason we're not building, and ignore what's going on in the mortgage market, is a bit disingenuous.
Vicky, you said some Labour MPs are unhappy with the stance taken by the Housing Secretary. Why so?
Well, I think based on the people that I spoke to yesterday when this was announced, they feel that London MPs in particular feel they weren't really consulted. I think some councillors heard about what was happening for the first time when I called them last week, because a memo about what was going to happen had been leaked to me. That's not a particularly nice way to hear about something that's going to have huge implications in your area. And those implications, let's just touch on them for a moment and why I do actually agree with that headline. If you are a local council lead, housing lead in London, and you've got some planning agreed where developers are going to have to contribute 35% affordable, and that's gone through, and that's the case that some councillors are in, and now the Secretary of State has said, okay, it's 20%. Those planning applications are going to be redone. Why would a developer go ahead with 35% when it's 20? So I think in the short term, reducing the amount of affordable housing developers have to contribute might actually slow things down because they're going to redo planning applications. In the long term, sure, it might speed things up a bit. But I think initially it's actually going to cause a bit more administration.
So we've got the government obviously carrying a fairly hefty can in all of this. Should some of the blame land at the door at City Hall, Sir Sadiq Khan?
I think it's fair to say that Sadiq Khan brought in the 35% target, which was his target, when the economy was in a very different place. You know, you talk about this every day, Nick, in the same way that I do. We're in a right old mess. Inflation has really, really hit absolutely every sector, and housing is no different. It's more expensive to build houses now than it was a few years ago. Labour costs have gone up. I think builders are, in fairness to them, they are in a very different place too. Their profit margins look different. It's much harder for them. So I think Sadiq's target, which, you know, he supported the housing secretary coming in and saying, let's change this. I don't, they were together doing interviews yesterday. I actually think there's an acknowledgement from City Hall that, that something had to change. Whether this is the right package of change, though, remains to be seen.
Vicky, thank you. Check out Vicky Spratt's analysis in today's iNewspaper. Vicky is the housing correspondent. I did say I'll give you a little bit more on what's called affordable housing. Well, to get you a purchase price for London is proving impossible, really, because you could spend anything you like from, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying starter homes for probably £300,000-£400,000, all the way up to, what do you want to spend, £12 million? So should we look at rental? A typical two-bed, not in the heart of London, in one of the areas, you're probably looking at about £2,000 per calendar month, so you can really do the maths. There would have to be a 20% reduction offered by a house builder on that, which obviously takes you 16. It's still extraordinary. See, each person has to find £800, which, of course, is a mortgage. Now, let's get into the charity sector here. Many charities saying these measures, as announced by the government, will make the homelessness issue in London worse. Research commissioned by Shelter shows that Sadiq Khan's decision to introduce the 35% quota prompted a rapid increase in the number of social homes being built in London. In the 7 years before the target, the numbers were not the same, but there are concerns now. Of course, if you take the target down, that will be the impact. Well, Reverend Mike Long, chaired Shelter's Commission on Social Housing, joins me now. What do you think might happen, Reverend? What do you fear could happen? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Nice to talk to you. I don't speak for Shelter, but I was in part of the commission and I'm proud to do so. But what's my impression? I'm disappointed, I think I have to say. I'm hugely disappointed, and I share the concerns that Vicky expressed a few moments ago in terms of what the immediate impact may be with the changes in planning. Now there's no incentive for developers to build 35% of social homes in the development. They can now just go for 20. For me, I think the big question is, will it work? Will it deliver homes for ordinary Londoners? And I think that's the acid test of this matter. If it turns out, and I recognise really something has to be done about the broken market in social housing, particularly London, but of course across the wider piece here. Something had to be done. Maybe this will help, but I'm disappointed at the principle that's involved, and I am deeply concerned, I have to say.
Reverend, why are we in London, the crisis in which we find ourselves?
Oh, we don't have anything like enough housing, and as you've already explained.
But is it a perfect storm? Rising costs, high interest, difficulty getting money? Is it so? Do they combine, Reverend?
Oh, I'm sure they all combine. Well, I suppose what I say also is the impact that and also the financial impact. You know, councils are going bust because they cannot afford the enormous cost of housing homeless families and people, you know, in their boroughs or wherever they manage to place them. You know, this is a system which needs radical change. And although some good moves have been made in recent years, and I recognise a sense, I think this is a symptom that the government recognises what is happening is not enough. The question is this the right move? I think only time will tell. But I'm disappointed and concerned.
Lastly, Rowan, the situation regarding homelessness in the city, is it getting worse? Is it getting better? Is it staying the same?
Well, I'm not a statistician, but my anecdotal evidence from what I see is getting worse in terms of the things that I see in terms of both rough sleepers and what I hear and see indeed in my local patch in East London is that this situation is actually getting worse.
I'm grateful for your time. Thank you. Mike Long, Reverend Mike Long, your former chair, I repeat, former chair of Shelter's Commission on Social Housing. Calls coming in already on this. Sun 9:16, LBC News headlines read by Thomas Watts.
Plaid Cymru have won the Senedd by-election in Caerphilly, ending Labour's 100-year hold on the area. Leaders including Volodymyr Zelensky will gather in London later to discuss the war in Ukraine. And the watchdog has warned there are significant challenges in how police tackle grooming gangs. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M4 Heathrow Spur Road. So this is southbound from the main M4 down to the terminals. And it's also very busy on the A4. Very slow on the A13 westbound, heading towards the Blackwall Tunnel exit. And that's because a van has broken down. Also, big problems for Coney Hatch Lane. A coach has broken down at Fry and Barnet. And as a result, there are lengthy delays on all approaches. On the train, South Western Railway services are running to and from Aldershot to both Ascot and Alton, but there are still delays. Also on the Underground, there is no service for the Piccadilly line between Uxbridge and Rayners Lane, and minor delays on the Central line.
LBC.
Making a business insurance claim can be stressful. That's why at NFU Mutual, we aim to respond to all claims quickly. We work with specialists to minimize disruption so you can get back to business as quickly as possible. It's no wonder over 95% of our business customers renew with us each year. For business insurance you can rely on, search NFU Mutual Business Insurance. NFU Mutual. Closer to your business and closer to what matters.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "All Change Please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protect your small business and understand cybersecurity.
Affordable housing. I mean, in a city like London, and I'm sure it's the same in other cities as well. I'm obviously not familiar with city prices in Manchester or even Leicester for that matter, but I'm sure it's just as tough. Kay's in Chichester. You've been hanging on the line for some time. Kay, what will you tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. First time caller. So
good to have you on. But you're not in London, I note. You're in Chichester, which is beautiful.
Yes, it is lovely. It's very expensive, though.
Is it?
The average house price here is $435,000.
But what would that get me? Like a three-bedroom semi, a three-bedroom detached? What would that get me?
Probably a three-bed semi.
Three-bed semi.
I would say, yeah.
Okay.
But the average wage here is $31,000.
Oh, right. What work is there in and around Chichester?
We've got a couple of fairly big companies. There is a little bit of investment, but
how commutable is Chichester from London? I.e., if I work in London, how long is the train journey home, back to Chichester?
It would be an hour and 40 minutes as an absolute minimum.
Right, okay. Do many people commute in?
Yes, I think quite a few, but of course with rail disruptions and strikes and what have you, it's not that easy.
So what's happening in the housing market where you are?
It's slow, it's sluggish, but we do have a lot of people. We've got an awful lot of new builds being built, and we do live on a floodplain.
Oh, right.
Which is pretty crucial. We're right at the foot of the South Downs.
Right, okay. So is it locals who are buying the new houses, or people coming?
No, they can't afford them.
hang on. So is it people retiring out of London or something like
that? It's people selling houses in London for $1 million or, 900, $1 million.
Banking
coming
for,
down here. Yeah, absolutely.
I've
paying for $450, $500 and putting the rest in the bank.
What happened during the pandemic? I read that a lot of people went to beautiful parts of the country like Chichester and elsewhere because they were working on Zoom or Teams, and they could do it in that fashion.
Yes, I think they did. I think that's very true. That's been a bit of slowing down now, probably a bit like Cornwall. I think the, you know, if you are a city person,
it's not always... A lot of them had to come back in, haven't they?
They do, yeah.
Finally, but, then, I mean, affordable housing, you hear the crisis that's going on in London. There's no crisis in Chichester because you say there's a lot of building going on.
There is a lot of building, but it's not for local people and it's not affordable. And that's the rub, really. I mean, how young people get on the property ladder these days, goodness only knows.
Okay, be well. Thank you. Thanks for your kind words about the show. Have yourself a great weekend down there in Chichester. Lauren says there's not a lack of properties built by developers in London. Look at Lewisham and Wandsworth. There are 100,000 flats built in the last 12 years, but many have cladding. There's no affordable homes. I've never seen a reduced sale or rental property that's classed as affordable. The problem is developers' greed. Jerry says, I went for a trip down memory lane on Tuesday, visited the flat in Fulham where I spent the first 4 years of my life. It is now worth £780,000, a two-bed flat just off the Fulham Palace Road. It is absolutely crazy. I wonder what your mum and dad, or whether you were in it, I don't know. I wonder what they gave for it, £780,000 for two beds. I can believe that, by the way. Let's stay in London. David's in Hampstead. David, what's causing these problems, do you think? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Great show. A few really important points. I mean, the first one is successive governments, although I say Labour have, like, just taken this to a different level, have decided legislate. And now Labour are adding legislation to supposedly change the legislation. It's just like layer of legislation. These people literally don't understand the world. The way it works, as I'm
Go on,
sure
then,
you
break
understand
it, break
well.
It down for very, me. What are we not understanding?
Very simple, and I'm an old 33-year-old. they just have to let the free market work, i.e. reduce this legislation. Don't give them the housing targets. Take away all targets. Let builders build. Let people do what they do best. And the other point on top of that is people do not have a God-given right to live in London, in Manchester, and Birmingham. Sometimes, in rare cases, maybe they do because they're severely disabled, maybe, and their family's there and they can't afford stuff. Fine. Very, very minute number of cases. People don't have that God-given right.
Why are you against targets, Dave? I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just interested.
Well, I think because a builder, a developer, a builder, whatever, their forte is to build houses, to develop, etc. When you start saying, well, there's these conditions and those conditions and those conditions and those conditions, they start to look at it. Just even as a business owner, they'll look at it and they'll go, well, I'm going to make less money there and there and there and there and there. And actually, this isn't really feasible anymore. Then the government go, oh, well, we'll give you some small grant. And then there's loads of legislation there as well. And they just look at this and they'll just go, this is just ridiculous. I mean, you think about this. You, as far as I'm aware, Nick, you own a property in London. I own a property in London. Think about how hard to get on that housing ladder whenever you did. Mm-hmm. You had to work. And think about now even to maintain a house. Yeah. People, this whole idea of you can just come here and the government will hand it to you on a plate. It's a crazy, crazy mentality that
well,
people just
handing
have to get
on
over.
A plate. I mean, David, they're looking for what's, they're looking for a 20% discount on purchase price or rental.
Yeah, but Nick, when I bought my house, when you bought your house, imagine if someone had told you we'll give you 20-30% off your purchase price, or when you were renting, they said we'll give you 20-30% off your rent. Unfortunately, it's just not a fair way. People who work hard get punished.
Do you think, lastly, and I hear what you say, you think the markets would solve this?
I think if the government had very, let's call it, flexible frameworks, i.e., you know, obviously you're going to have certain planning rules. You can't build a 55-storey building in the middle of, some random area. But, I mean, ultimately, if you say, look, build, there's safety conditions, etc., maybe the Grenfell cladding thing, okay, cool, fine. But just build the houses. Essentially, if there's more volume, it's a very, again, these politicians do not understand it. Yeah, supply and demand.
David, thank you. Really interesting conversation. Not sure I'm on the same page with you everywhere, but a lot of what you sent to me makes sense. Let's see what others make of it. Faraz, you're the next caller. Let's get a couple of emails in, though. This person asks, I don't use their name, but they say my spouse works for a company. They build houses. They've had to stop due to the fact people are not buying. So until they sell the ones they've already built, they can't afford to build the next section of housing. Greg in Harlow, we need more council rental stock built on grey belt land for people. Built by council builders, which will give... I don't think councils have builders anymore, though. Which will give councils rents. Why not train the migrants with skills even to build them? Getting private builders to build affordable homes is a joke. Well, yes, once, of course, the people who arrive here are legally processed, that might have some merit. Faraz is in Denham, just outside of London. Faraz, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, so I'm a chartered town planner and surveyor.
Oh, wow,
and
that's
I
interesting.
Work. And I work in a medium-sized planning business in London. So I'm at the sort of heart of this sort of process. I think the first thing to say is the measures that were introduced by the Secretary of State and the Mayor are bold and challenging for them to have introduced, and that's because they're trying to be muscular in trying to help the market and stimulate it, but at the same time tell the boroughs that they will have to take some ownership control at mayoral level if necessary, and particularly ahead of a local election. That's
what do you mean by take ownership and control?
So two elements that the mayor will be armed with. He will be able to take over planning applications of schemes of over 50 homes or more.
Right.
That used to be 150.
Okay.
And he can also do what's called a mayoral development order. In other words, he can make planning decisions directly as well. So muscular tools, bearing in mind localism, is something that's quite important.
Well, sorry, that mayoral order means the housing secretary can't call it in, is that right?
Effectively, the mayor will take that decision. It won't be a matter for the Secretary of State in terms of the sort of schemes. Look, the key point here is they're trying to get the market to move. And there's been a lot of talk about the reduction to the 20% off the 35% affordable homes target. But, of course, if the market isn't delivering anything, you're not going to get anything from the 35%. So they're right to try and stimulate it with this new fast-track levy. What I would say is missing, however, Nick...
Well, I want to ask you, as a professional in the field, what needs to change?
There are a number of other things that need to happen, particularly on the demand side. And we have an autumn budget coming next month. The Chancellor really needs to look at how they can incentivise the home buying market to get that demand going. That might mean relief of stamp duty. That might mean a mortgage guarantee. It might even mean a new Help to Buy product. But you need to get the demand to work alongside the delivery, because joining the dots is so important to get this market moving.
Lastly, year on year, does it get worse? The shortage.
This is part of the compounding problem of why we're seeing the escalation of values of properties now. 88,000 homes is a target for London alone, 1.5 million for the country. In London alone, they only started 5,000 homes. So the stark reality is we need to get building, and that means pulling all the stops. And just my final point, if I may, Nick, one of the issues that could help is let's get the state to start building on public land. You know,
what do you mean
we have
land?
Homes in England, so land that's owned by NHS estates, MOD, all of these sort of
these derelict
areas.
Sites you see everywhere.
Yes.
Get in there. Faraz, I must go because we've got to get to the news. Isabella, you'll be the next caller. I hope you can hold. Just to Faraz's point, the target, as he rightly said, is 1.5 million homes. We've had another look at it. The year close, year one, 186,600 homes. Well, if you've got to do 300,000 a year over 5 years to get you to 1.5 million, 186 is just squeaking over half the required. That target a long way off. As I say, Isabella, if you can hold, you'll be the next call. Also after the news, the number of 16 to 24-year-olds, Gen Zers, I believe, reporting symptoms of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Lee Wallbank is from the charity OCD Action.
OCD needs to be seen as a serious mental health condition, and policymakers and the government need to invest in OCD and OCD services.
More on that after this. 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ryan, LBC News Time. Thomas Watts.
Plaid Cymru have won a battle with Reform UK to win the Senedd by-election in Caerphilly. Lindsay Whittle took nearly half of the vote ahead of Reform on 36% and Labour on just 11%. Rachel Reeves is reportedly looking at raising income tax in the budget next month. It's understood the Chancellor's considering a breach of a key manifesto pledge to reduce a multi-billion pound shortfall. A meeting of the so-called Coalition of the Willing will be held in London later. Keir Starmer will urge Ukrainian allies to increase Kiev's supply of long-range weapons to strike back at Russia. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most places, cloudy with heavy rain in northeastern parts of the UK, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
The £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, four McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11 a.m. Not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants subject to availability.
People ask me, what's my good place? Down the park, having fun with Toby, my cockapoo. And knowing that my pension with PensionBee is managed by experienced money managers. So, not chasing the stick then, Toby? No.
At Pension Bee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
Right, let's get into your call straight away with housing. I'll talk OCD in a moment, but Isabella in Rochester, you've been hanging on the line and I'm grateful. You're in Rochester, is that where you always wanted to live? Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Yes, so basically we had to move out of London to Rochester just so that we could have a better way of living.
Right. How long have you been there?
So we moved in March, so we finally, I'm 32 and it took me forever to be able to get on the property ladder, which was actually quite painful for us and a difficult process.
Right.
But when we were looking at the market, it was either stay in London and have a one-bed flat in maybe an area we wouldn't really want to consider.
Yep.
Or move out of London and get a three-bed house.
Right.
It was one of those things.
Okay, and you and your... sorry, is it your husband, your partner, whatever?
My partner.
You and your partner, okay. Are you glad you did it? When you wake up in the rural idyll of Kent on a Saturday morning, you think, great. Or do you think, I wish we were still in buzzy London?
I think it's mixed emotions, to be honest with you. I think we're in a position where, in our area, it is beautiful, it is peaceful, it is definitely different, and we have a good life here. What is a struggle is we have people in the area complaining about Londoners moving out or Londoners going into new builds and it's ruining the countryside. Mm. But we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place because, like, how are we supposed to afford a house if we can't move out?
No, I appreciate that. Would it be, if you got major promotion, if you changed your jobs, if you came into money, would you want to come back into London or do you think now you're going to stay out?
I think, to be honest, we'll stay out. Mm. Just because, as I said, it is beautiful, it is calmer.
It's lovely. Have you had the Dickens Festival yet?
Oh, I haven't yet. Really, really excited for that.
What are you going to dress as?
Oh, that's going to be a tricky one. I haven't thought about that
yet. That's going to be such fun. Give me a call, enjoy. Just to explain, what the hell is Nick called about? Rochester was the birthplace of Charles Dickens, and every year I come... When is it? Can you remember? What day of month is it? I can't even remember.
So it's in December. It's early December.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think it's from the 7th and the 9th and the 14th and the 16th, so it's well worth a go.
And all the residents dress up, well, not all, many of the residents dress up in Dickensian costume, various Dickensian characters, and the whole of Rochester sort of spins to Dickensian times. Isabella, enjoy. It's great fun. I went once, gosh, in a previous life, 120 years ago, but it was a huge hoot. And I absolutely take on board what you say about property prices. If you're not on the property ladder and you've no interest in the property ladder, what about health? I wonder if that would interest you. What about OCD or obsessive compulsive disorder? And the troubling research that shows the number of 16 to 24-year-olds in the country, which I understand to be Gen Z, as reporting symptoms of OCD, has more than tripled in 10 years. This is NHS data studied by the BBC. It gets worse. The condition is now the second most widespread mental health disorder for young adults, according to this research. And one person who works in the charity says it's like a bully. It attacks everything that you care about, everything you love. So, before I go to the calls, let me brief, and I don't try and tell you too much about me because it's so desperately boring. But I said to my producer, off air, by the way, off air, I said, actually, I'm going to say I had OCD. So she said, yes, I knew you had that. I said, I don't think you did. I've never said it. She said, oh, she said, no, I'm sorry, I meant claustrophobia. She is training to be a resident doctor, so we've got no problems there. But I did have it, and it was awful. And it manifested itself with me in that I continually washed my hands. Continually. To the point that, is the word chapped, where they got really red and broke? Chapped, is it? Or chaffed? I couldn't remember. Chapped, I'm told. And they were, I mean, they were on the point of bleeding. I would wash them so much. I was obviously in a bad state. Subsequently, I worked out it's because my father had been diagnosed with cancer, and it completely sent me for a loop. I didn't realise he was going to die from cancer. I knew it was serious. And the way I got out of it is when your father, who you now know was dying of cancer, when he tells you, son, you've got to pull yourself together and stop this nonsense, you suddenly think, God, my father's struggling to get breath. He's on an oxygen cylinder. I think I'll stop washing my hands. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But that was my person. And it completely took control. Ridiculous. That my hands would sometimes almost bleed. And it was so painful. So you know what I would do? I'd wash them again. What the hell was going on in my head? Lee's in Sheffield. You're on the radio, Lee. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Yeah, I'd listen to you there, Nick. My daughter had the same thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, not through someone having cancer, I hope.
A granddad, yeah, got diagnosed with cancer.
God, I'm so sorry, man.
I think it was there anyway. The OCD was there, but that kind of made it worse.
When you say it was there, how did it show itself prior to... Sorry, was that your father then who got cancer?
No, my wife's father.
Your father-in-law. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So what was there prior to then?
So when my wife was putting it to bed, she messed about with the wardrobe doors, shut it 3 times, and then touched the door handle a few times. And she was just taking ages to get ready for school. Like, we'd leave her to get ready, come up, and she'd just done nothing.
She was continually touching the door handles?
Yeah, we'd leave in the room. We didn't know what she was doing because she was in a room. She would give her privacy.
Right.
And it turns out she was going through her routines before she could go to school, which was affecting her getting dressed. She got like a sensory issue where she couldn't wear tight clothes around the neck. And so
How old was she at this point?
Started, because she was in the transition period from going from primary school up to secondary school.
So that's 11, 12?
Yeah, yeah. 10, 11, so 12, yeah. So they never got a proper induction because it was in lockdown.
Oh, God.
So they didn't get the social support from the friends. It was horrendous. And it escalated quickly. And it was compounded by school because she got this sensory issue where she couldn't wear a tie. Then some teachers weren't aware, and they'd recommend her for having a tie and try and put her in detention for not having a tie on.
But when she said, sir, miss, I've got a condition, I can't have tightness around my neck, did they not relent?
No, we had countless meetings at school and said, look, we need your staff to be briefed. Either you have a daily report, a daily briefing, say, right, these children have got these needs. And I said, the head teacher said, oh, why don't we give them a little badge? No, because that's isolating.
He's
making
terrible.
Him stand out.
Yeah.
The school said everything, but did 10% of what they said.
The girl is now 16, 17. What is she now, 16 or 17?
She's 16 now. She's just done GCSEs. Yeah, she got 2 GCSEs, but we only put her through 2 because she was so behind on the others.
Yeah.
Her attendance for the last... She probably didn't attend school for the last 3 years. She went to, in our area, there's a specialist school called Aaron Hill, which is extremely difficult to get on.
Mm.
When she went to that school, she was about 12 months behind the curriculum. She was there for 3 months, and when she left there, she was 3 months ahead of where she needed
to
be.
Really?
Wow. Because she got the attention she needed.
Lee, when you said to her, let's not name her. Let's call her Nicola. There we go, Nicola. Why do you keep touching the door handles? What did she say back to you?
Oh, she won't talk to us about it. She just says bad things will happen if I don't do this.
Bad things will happen.
But she doesn't want to vocalise it because then it's more likely to happen. But she thinks bad things are going to happen to her immediate family.
Did you ever have this when you were a kid?
Never. No.
Her mum, your partner or girlfriend?
Wife? Yeah, my wife did. She said she used to have to turn the light on and off like 5 times before she could go to bed. That kind of routine. But now, so maybe it's a little bit in the registry. But I think a lot of it was brought on
You've
by...
You've got no OCD. So, I mean, to this day, when I lock the front door, I will always just push it three... I don't know why three. Just three times. Just one, two, three. I'm satisfied I've locked the front door. You've got nothing like that at all. You can shut your front door and just walk away, Lee.
The front door, yes. But we've got thumb locks inside on our patio doors. So
you've got what locks?
Thumb locks. You know, so you turn it with the thumb rather than the key on the inside.
Oh, okay.
So before we go to bed at night, I kind of know that I've locked it, but I do check again, just for security reasons.
And lastly, how much, had it not been for COVID, do you think the issues surrounding your daughter would be as, I don't know whether the word serious, as complicated as they are?
I think COVID compounded it by the fact that she was 12 years old and she saw us going to Morrison's with a mask on, coming back, and literally spraying all our food and packaging with disinfectant so that she's got contamination OCD.
Wish her well. Thank you. Good luck to the kid. Correction, and I'm grateful. Thank you to Phil and to Mick and Milton Keynes, Charles Dickens, sorry, he was born in Portsmouth. It became a focus for him in later life. Thank you. I apologise. So, yeah, I'm very happy to make that correction, not least as I... nearly all his works. Do you know Dickens was paid by the word? That's why his books are so weighty. True story. Was paid by the word. So if you find some of his books a little bit heavy going... Holly's in Shepherd's Bush. Holly, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm all right, because I'm through it now. It was 40... When did I lose Dad? 47 years ago or something. What about you?
Yeah, so I'm 60 now, and I first developed OCD when I was 21.
Right.
I was travelling overseas and carefree graduate, you know, world at my feet as such.
Yep. You knew everything. Day, you were master of your own, or mistress of your own domain, whatever you want to say.
That's it. Indeed. And one day I was just driving home from being out, and I felt a little bump in the road, and I'm like, oh, have I knocked someone over? I'm like, don't be so daft, of course you haven't. But I was compelled to go back and check, so I kind of drove back down the road. And then I thought, well, maybe it was a bit further back down the road. Anyway, I ended up literally driving back an hour to where I'd been, and then got home, and then got back in the car and did it again. And I literally was driving around all night, convinced somehow that I'd caused some sort of road traffic accident. And from there, it snowballed into full-blown OCD over the years that led to... goodness. A period of 9 months in an acute psychiatric ward, which didn't help at all because the treatment isn't right for OCD.
And why were you put in that psychiatric ward? Was it voluntary? Was it a doctor? Was it your family? How did it happen?
I was a voluntary admission initially, and I became very unwell while I was in there because it was just, you know, if you've ever had the misfortune of stepping place in a psych ward, they're just terrific places. And a place where they are just... a place of illness, not wellness. But anyway, I got worse while I was in there. But the reason being is I was not functioning. I became obsessed that there was a chemical in a cleaning fluid, and I became obsessed because OCD is extraordinarily irrational, as you know. Mm-hmm. That somehow this chemical was going to turn me into Hannibal Lecter. I became absolutely obsessed that I was going to become this monstrous individual. So I literally threw everything out of my house that could have come into contact with this cleaning fluid. I kept washing my clothes. I literally had no clothes to wear. I was walking around in bin bags. I couldn't eat food because I was convinced...
How were you weren't working then. How did you pay for life?
I couldn't work at that point. I wasn't working at this point. I'd had savings from my job because I'd kind of been in work, high-paid work, and then got very unwell again, so couldn't work. So, yeah, it's had a devastating effect on that.
But how are you now?
I've had two other stints in hospitals at the Bessemer, which is the OCD unit for OCD. So there's only one centre. It's the leading centre in the world. Yeah, look, I'm much better now. And the reason is I just think I think they've changed the treatment a little bit, how they approach it. And I was lucky to have treatment at that world-class centre. But what piqued my interest this morning was the OCD action, call to action to get more specific interventions.
Right.
Because, I've got a lot to be grateful for, of course, but this has devastated my life. It's taken away the chance to be a mother. I couldn't be a mother because I was terrified of, you know, being this monstrous individual. It's impacted my career, my relationships,
Have you had relationships down the years or not been able to, really?
I've had a couple, but, you know, and they're incredibly understanding. But, you're not we don't function like a normal individual. And of course, on one hand, you can be. You can go to work and be totally normal, and people would have no idea, except when you're extraordinarily ill and you're not at work, right? But, you know, I've hidden it, even from close friends. A lot of people don't even know. Like, I've got a false name. A lot of my friends don't even know, close friends, don't even know, because it's a shame. It feels a shameful condition. It's not, like, something you can talk about, like, you know, heart disease or a neurological condition. It's a lot of shame, a lot of secrecy. And it sounds so ridiculous as well, like, to say all these things.
I know. And I look back when I had it. So what's your abiding memory of time on a psychiatric ward, lastly, Holly?
It's horrific, and it's not the right place for anybody with any condition, and it's certainly not the right place for somebody with OCD. So, yes, get the right policies in place, the right interventions in place, because there are a lot of people out there who should be working, who can't be working, who want to work, because their lives have been devastated and ruined by this condition.
Be well. I don't say that glibly. I do not say that glibly. Be well, Holly. Thank you for your input. We're running a bit late. It's 9:48. LBC News headlines read by Thomas Watts.
Plaid Cymru have taken the Senedd seat of Caerphilly, an area dominated by Labour for more than 100 years. Sir Keir Starmer will make the case for using frozen Russian assets to fund Ukraine's defences at a meeting in London later. And the Chancellor is said to be looking at raising income tax in next month's budget. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most places, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M4 Heathrow Spur Road. It's very busy from the main M4 down to the terminals. There are delays of about half an hour. Also, there are problems on the M3 southbound at Junction 3 at Lightwater. A car's just broken down, so one lane is closed. In Fry and Barnet, Coney Hatch lanes had to be closed both ways because a coach has broken down, and that's causing severe delays in the area. Now, there are problems on the underground. No Piccadilly line running between Uxbridge and Rayners Lane. Minor delays on the Central Line and also on the Bakerloo Line. Kilburn Park Station is closed. And Southwestern Railway service is still delayed by about 15 minutes via Aldershot.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Extraordinary result for Plaid Cymru in Caerphilly. So here's a load of guests from a completely different party.
James O'Brien on LBC.
Two Costa Lattes for Abby.
It's the first time you've seen each other since summer. Four loops through the park later. It's warmer now. Not in temperature, in connection. You've covered toddler tantrums and the eternal mystery of how Katie is always on holiday. Between snorts of laughter and warm sips, you realise this is the best present you've unwrapped all year. This season, it's more than a latte. It's a Costa Christmas catch-up. Costa Coffee, made with heart.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Half term is here. I've 100% got this. They will keep a lid on the glitter and they will not ambush my work calls. But if all else fails, McDonald's deal drop.
Get 15% off the whole menu when you spend £15 on food and drink. Redeem this half term only on the McDonald's app. Fees apply to delivery. 18 plus, one time use per week until the 2nd of November. Participating restaurants, T's and C's apply.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, get 3 months free. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 27th of November. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
Back to OCD in a minute. Just a couple of emails on the subject of housing. Lee in Sittingbourne, always enjoy your show, but you're right to highlight the housing collapse, but you point out that NIMBYs are holding us all back so much. Kathy says, my son and partner, 27 and 25, moving to their first property today in Twickenham. The price, $500,000. They both have good jobs and are savers. Without the cash support of both families, it would not have been doable. This is a reality for many young first-time buyers. Congratulations to them. Hope it goes well. Let's hope they have a lovely night with push a boat out and try and get some champagne, rather than Prosecco. Let's talk OCD. Wendy is in Petswood, which is in Kent. Wendy, you're on the radio. What do you tell me? Good morning.
Hello. Thanks for having me on, Nick.
Hello, Wendy.
I was referring to your earlier comment. You were talking about your own experience.
Yes.
Obviously glad that you got over it.
Thank you.
But you used the terms, you referred to your father and how he said you've got to get over this nonsense.
Yep, pull yourself together, son.
Yeah.
Doesn't work for everyone, I hasten to add. Doesn't work for everyone, I know that.
No, that's what I was going to say. I'm really glad it worked for you. But generally, I had a friend who had OCD, and it is so debilitating. I thought it was a case, like you said, about losing your door and closing the door checking the lock three times. Yep. I thought it was that sort of thing. Or like me, turning the tins around in the cupboard so that the labels are out.
But you I do that just so I know what they are. Is that OCD?
Yeah, true. I know, but that's what I'm saying. I think often these days we overuse the terms. You get a little bit neurotic about something, and you say, "Oh, I'm a bit OCD."
Yep.
And now that I know what it's like, because I've seen it, can be so debilitating. And I don't think those terms. I mean, you come across as someone very confident.
Yeah.
As someone, you know, someone as my friend was, who wasn't and had a lot of sort of issues about. Poor confidence and you know, thinking he was worthless, etc.
Yeah,
that's right. It wouldn't have worked for him,
And by the way, my father did it very compassionately, so it wasn't pull yourself together. It was come on, you know, you can't go on like that because you're going to make your hands bleed. So it was done with compassion. But I absolutely accept, Wendy, it would not work for every single person.
Yeah, I just thought it was worth highlighting that because generally a lot of people suffering are not going to be.
What's the worst impact for your friend, the person you're talking about? I mean, how, just briefly, obviously no names, but what is the impact it has on him or her?
It was every movement from waking up to you know, trying to get to work didn't work in the end. One of your other callers said, you know, just staying in a room and having to touch everything and go through routines over and over again, saying certain words over and over again to the point that, you know, he couldn't get out of the room.
Okay. Lastly, we're having this conversation because it's been revealed that the numbers, what we call Gen Zers, it's tripled. I wonder why, Wendy, 16 through 24-year-olds. I wonder why.
I'm a bit of a cliche, but I wonder if some of that is to do with COVID, you know, a part of it. I don't know. I've thought the same myself.
Wendy, good luck to your friend or relative. Hope you're well. Thanks for your kind words. Jay's in Fleet. Jay, you have it at the moment, or you had it? Which is it for you?
Yeah, it's an ongoing thing. It's I've had it since I was about 9. I'm now in my 40s, and it's not as bad as it was. You know, thank God.
How come you've got a degree of control on it? Do you suppose, Jay? What have you managed to achieve?
Well, I had counselling when you know NHS counselling was available many years ago. I think now the situation's a lot worse. What I would like to say, I don't know how long you're going to let me speak for, so. Really, it started with things like going over my handwriting, hand washing, like you were saying. It got worse and worse and worse to the point where if I drove anywhere, I thought I'd cause an accident and I'd have to drive back over the bit of road I'd just driven. Oh, so, you know, it could take me an hour to go 5 miles down the road kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the worst thing was it progressed onto something called pure OCD, which is where you're kind of living in your head. So you're not actually doing any rituals, but you're going over what you've done and trying to find fault with yourself, to the point where I thought I was telling people on the phone that I'd done something criminal, or dropping notes telling people that, or at work that I'd written something that I'd incriminated myself or my job. It's debilitating to the point where I was stuck in my house for weeks. I couldn't leave my house. What helped after the, one thing the councillor said to me, because I'm sure there's people listening in with similar thoughts, one thing that really helped me, particularly in terms of like harming people, like convinced that I'd harmed someone or pushed them off the pavement into the path of traffic or something, and I was constantly looking over my shoulder, one thing that really helped was the councillor told me that the people that worry that they're going to do something like that or they have done something like that are very sensitive people, and they're the least likely people to actually do those things, and that's why it causes them so much distress.
Isn't that interesting?
And that really helped me to kind of think, actually, yeah, and he said the other thing to do is you need to, was there any evidence that you did it? Like, you know, you thought you'd cause an accident. Did you hear anything? Did you see anything? Did you feel anything? And you have to kind of push through that. You think, no, I didn't, and I'm not going to keep looking in my mirrors and that kind of thing. I think, no, I didn't experience any of those things, so I'm going to keep going. And it's really hard at first, but the more you do it, the easier it gets.
So lastly, Jay, that you are relatively on top of it, why do you suppose that is in a couple of sentences?
Firstly, the counselling. Secondly, and as I say, those things that the counsellor told me. And secondly, I think I found faith in my 30s, which really helped. Yeah.
And how does that help you?
Prayer.
Okay.
Which sounds, you know, a bit kind of trite, but it does. And just kind of, I think also the years of kind of understanding what's happening and realising that it's not real. It takes a long time.
All right.
Time for me, but I hope the things I've said have helped other people out. Particularly those who are stuck in their own mind thinking that they're harming people, because it's the worst thing you can imagine.
Jay, I'm going to end there, and apologies to many others who want to talk about OCD. I think this is something to which we should return, because it is very, very live issue. And well done for the research that's got it out there. All right, just before I go, I want to tell you about Monday's show, when I've already pre-recorded an interview with this man.
Gaspar, you can finish it here!
Paul Gascoigne scoring that famous goal for England against Scotland in Euro 96. There will be two versions. There will be the one that we will play out on Monday, and there will be the X-rated version. Let's just say Mr. Gascoigne, he Fs and Jeffs just as well as he scores the goals. It was the most extraordinary interview I think I've ever conducted. And the more I suggested he might like to stop swearing, guess what? The more he did. So two versions, one you can hear on the wireless, and one I'll tell you how you can get elsewhere. I'm done. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm back with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, do have a safe weekend.
So a director's cut, effectively.
There will be the director's cut, exactly right.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock. Extraordinary scenes overnight in Caerphilly, which we will have a little look at in the course of the programme. Perhaps not quite as significant in some ways as the initial result would allow, but it is, however you dice it, absolutely appalling news for the governing party. And it is to the governing party that we turn our attention first this morning. Rachel Reeves is considering raising income tax to help eliminate a multi-million pound black hole, sources have told one newspaper. And of course it is in direct contravention of one of those, I think, increasingly stupid looking pledges that she made before becoming Chancellor.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Plaid Cymru are celebrating a Senedd by-election win in Caerphilly, breaking Labour's 100-year hold on the area. They finished on 47% of the vote, ahead of Reform UK on 36%, and Labour on just 11%. Only 2% of voters backed the Conservatives. LBC's political correspondent, Aggie Chambray, says it could lead to a redrawing of the electoral map.
It's absolutely astonishing. And when I was speaking to people too in Wales, one of them was suggesting they think that we are heading towards a more kind of European style of governing, where there are basically lots of small parties in a coalition. And that is the way they think things will go. And looking at this result, it looks like Plaid Cymru would win the Senedd, and they would have their first minister in Welsh Parliament. But I think big questions for Keir Starmer, but absolutely huge questions too for Kemi Badenoch.
The Plaid leader, Rhun ap Iorwerth, says the win marks a reset for Welsh politics. Sir Keir Starmer is to urge allies of Ukraine to step up Kiev's supply of long-range weapons. A meeting of the so-called Coalition of the Willing will be held in London later. Ukraine's leader, Volodymyr Zelensky, is expected to be among the leaders taking part in those talks. Rachel Reeves is reportedly looking at raising income tax in the budget next month. It's understood the Chancellor's considering a breach of a key manifesto pledge to reduce a multi-billion pound shortfall. President Trump has fallen out with Canada again, calling off all trade negotiations. He pulled out of the talks after the Ontario government started running a TV advert in the US to make the case against tariffs. And NatWest has reported a 30% increase in earnings between July and September. The group, which also includes RBS and Ulster Bank, reported a pre-tax profit of £2.2 billion for the quarter. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 2 points at 95.76. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, scattered showers and sunny spells for most places, cloudy with heavier rain in the northeast, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Tesco Finest Sourdough. The real breadwinner. Untoasted, really toasted. Or buttered right to the edges. Whatever floats your toast, it's delicious either way. It's why only the finest bakers take 24 hours to carefully craft our sourdough. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. How much attention do you pay to what things used to be like? Not in a kind of in my day-itis kind of way. Oh, everything was better in my day. We all do that as we get older, I think, sometimes. It's quite important to guard against it. But I don't think that we pay... We look forward mostly, don't we? We're like sharks. We're moving forward most of the time, rather than looking back. Well, actually, that's not true either, is it? If you think of the political movements at the moment that are based upon nostalgia for a non-existent England past. But I mention that because I don't know whether it's always been like this. I've been really puzzling over one very simple question now for the best part of a year. And it's this. It's how do we end up in a place where everybody acknowledges that we have got financial problems as a country? You can listen, even for the purposes of today's program, you can pretend that they had nothing to do with Brexit if you want, but yeah, that's not the point today. Everybody knows that A, we have got too much debt, although there's some mildly good news on that front that I'll share with you shortly, and B, austerity has been an unmitigated disaster and we need a lot more money in all sorts of areas of the country. I don't know how anyone disagrees with that. And yet, you know, calls for cuts still run through the Conservative Party like Blackpool through a stick of rock. Farage's outfit, elected to various councils with promises to cut costs and to cut this and to cut that, and then, of course, arriving there and being hit over the head by reality and announcing that they're almost certainly going to have to introduce the maximum 5% council rate rises next year. So, unless you're a liar or an idiot, you recognise, maybe there's another category there, if I've been unfair and you want to add somebody else to that list. So, if you're a liar or an idiot or an other, you know that the government needs more money to spend on the things that you want the government to spend on. And yes, of course, you can also look at waste, although there isn't as much as everybody tells you there is, which is, of course, the story of the reform councils. Getting elected by telling lies or just being a bit stupid on questions of waste and then getting into power and realising that there is no fat left to trim. And yet everybody still thinks that we need to find more money to spend on new stuff. Everything. I don't know, what's your particular bugbear? I don't know that I'm ever more middle-aged than when I start thinking about potholes. There is something about potholes that drives me absolutely, pardon the pun, potty. It really does. It just seems to me to speak of a malaise that goes much wider. I'm not even a motorist, particularly. You know, I'm not a petrol head by any stretch of the imagination. But potholes, I mean, even if you're not driving over them, they just look awful. And that is a really good example of, I'd say it was an example of the public spending equivalent of the kind of, what did they call it in New York when they had that theory that if you had a broken window in an area, then it was more likely to become, it wasn't the broken window theory, Keith. Get out. Seriously, go and stand in the corner. It had something else. It may even have been under Giuliani before he went mad. And his sort of face started melting. The idea that a broken window will increase the likelihood of graffiti, and graffiti will increase the likelihood of litter not being picked up, and suddenly you're living in a part of town that is, I got zero tolerance somewhere in the back of my mind, but I don't think it was called that. But there's a public sector, there's a public spending equivalent of that, isn't there? And a pothole speaks of governance that is bankrupt. Or, at the very least, massively underfunded. We can't afford to fix the holes in the road. We're not fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wandering. We can't afford to do that. The broken window theory, it may actually have been called. So apologies to Keith, can come back out of the corner. And yet we are all adamant, or most of us are adamant, that we shouldn't be paying more tax. I find this absolutely fascinating. Do you know what I'd really like to do? It's Friday. It's been a long week. I'd like to stop talking now. There it is. There's your topic. We all want more money for the government. We all want the government to have more money to spend on the things that we want the government to spend money on, but we don't think we should be the ones providing it. Discuss. 0345 606 0973. How confident would I have to be just to put my feet up now and wait to see what you've got to say? But that's going to be the central thrust of what I'm asking you in 5, 6 minutes' time. Well, I'm asking you now, but I won't stop talking for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes. There's another element to this conversation as well, which I am going to perhaps personalise in a way I may later regret. But I don't think I'll be giving away any major confidences. So, what will happen if and when Rachel Reeves raises income tax? She shouldn't have promised that she wasn't going to. There's some argument about how much of a surprise the scale of the black hole left by the Conservatives actually was. I think that SNP politicians had pinpointed fairly accurately what the figure was likely to be before Labour.